Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
And yet somehow exciting week kicks off here at the Horn. It's a little past 6 o'clock, coming up on 6:02 here on the East Coast. I'm Bob, of course. Welcome to the new listeners who find the program every day, who find the network every day. I hope you'll feel at home here, and I hope you will treat this as the family-style community that we have built. Making for free-flowing, wide-ranging, open conversation. Make yourself at home. Make yourself welcome. There are, in fact, a variety of ways to make yourself at home and make yourself welcome at the Horn. One is taking part in the programming. I'm not the only one. There are a myriad of hosts on the Horn, including Guy James, John Fox, Mark Levine, myself, Billy Shears, Rick Goodner, and Rick Smith, with hopes for continued growth all the time. Those programs are all open to you, either live via the telephone, via email, or via the chat room at headonradionetwork.com. For that matter, there are the forums, the forum, at headonradionetwork.com. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com has been enjoying a massive renovation, kind of like we cleared out all the dusty old vinyl 70s furniture and started bringing in the new postmodern stuff. And the new website is nothing if not absolutely stunningly gorgeous. John Fox, assisted ably by chat room moderator and all around just autodidact, ELO, otherwise known as Sue, with input from chat room moderator Lottie on the forums, has done a magnificent job. There is and it's in the process of completion at this point. Registration is open on the website, and once folks are signed up to it, you can take advantage of something called the wire. And they can post to my wire, and we can do just about anything that, News Ninja Gene and Ben Birch, of course, have been integral to the process. Ben Birch has been huge in this process. No blogs are available yet, but that's coming. There's a whole bunch of stuff coming. But among other things, you can sign up and post to the wire. The forums are coming along nicely. The chat room is right there, headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. It's free. Jump in. The wire's like an internal Twitter. That's probably the best way to describe it, an internal Twitter. And we can go back and forth. You friend up. There's a friend process, and it's all very cool. So take advantage of it. It is there for you. And it is there to, we're networking. I'm sitting here getting text messages from John Fox as we go. He's got the inside skinny. He's got the handle on what all of this does that I don't yet. But we're working on it. We're working on my login for the forum and stuff. That's why if you were listening, I think Thursday night when our dear friend Renee Louise, otherwise known in the chat room as Thunderstone, asked me to put up some helpful hints for chasing Flush Flemball off the air of your local stations. It was Scott from Sweden who kindly offered to transcribe my remarks and turn them into a forum post, which is there. And you know what? That is a tool. If you want to get the hate-filled filth that is Flush Flemball off of your local air, take advantage of that forum post and put some of it to use. Now, the nastiest part of that whole process is, of course, sitting down and listening to 3 hours of that drug-addled madman raving about how he wants to see this nation that he and his party have so nearly, utterly destroyed, how he wants to see the job finished, how he wants to see Barack Obama and the Democrats fail. His word, not mine. So if you're tired of that, you can work on it. Part of it is listening to 3 hours and finding out who the advertisers are. Listen for what advertisers are national versus what advertisers are local. For instance, if you hear an advertisement for, say, a patent baldness remedy, that's a national ad. So are ads for Swedish mattresses, steel buildings, herbal erection supplements, vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls. Those are national ads. Buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your safest investment hedge against inflation. That's a national ad. On the other hand, all you Rush Limbaugh listeners, come on down to Stan's VP on Friday and get a free car wash with Philip. Just tell them Mega Ditto's at the counter. That is a local ad. And just to recap, what I suggest is that once you know who the advertisers are, you make a pleasant phone call to the general manager of the station and you explain to them, I have cataloged every advertisement that ran in today's 3 hours of Rush Limbaugh. I am going to contact them now. I'm going to urge others to contact them. We are going to contact them without ceasing. And we're going to make sure that they understand that there will never be a single cent spent in their establishment so long as they are part of the Hate America, See America Fail crowd as represented by Rush Limbaugh. Explain to the general manager that he has a choice. Pull Flush now or watch his business go down the toilet and have it sort of done for him peremptorily. All pleasant, all businesslike. So, yeah, there you go. But that's all laid out on the forum there at headonradionetwork.com/forum. A little something I wanted to mention to you. I was listening to Malloy the other night. Yeah, and listen, you know, my vanity is not involved, but yeah, I'm still a fan of the format, and most assuredly a fan of Mike Malloy. And I heard him mention, if you recall a few months back, I had Vincent Bugliosi on the program to talk about his book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. And he talked about this plan whereby he hoped to put the book in the hands of prosecutors all around the country. Well, a fellow by the name of Bob Alexander, whom those of you who listen to Malloy will know as being the proprietor at superbeans.com, decided to put his activism where his hands were. And he put together a huge party featuring folks with names like Dave and Ray and Doug and Allison and Jude and Nicholas and Adrian and Norm and Ken and Kim and Bill and Linda and Dan and Sue. And they started peeling mailing labels and attaching them to padded envelopes, folding cover letters in half and sticking them in the books, putting the books in the envelopes, sealing the envelopes, affixing the postage, and putting a media mail stamp on it. They did this on Saturday. Bob Alexander says Saturday was epic. He said this went on for 9 solid hours. Bob says everybody was positively obsessed with getting it done. But without the negative miasma of grim determination, it was a job that had to be done, Bob says. Afterward, everybody went down to their favorite Chinese joint for barbecued pork, platters of rice, chicken, vegetables, and noodles. He said he'd write more about everything that bends or moves in any way, fingers, knuckles, elbows, knees, shoulders, and everything else, from lugging the books and doing all the folding and the stuffing and the mailing and the stamping and the peeling. Hurts. He says we still have loads of boxes to take to the post office, but the weirdest part is behind us. And, you know, I just wanted to let you know that, I mean, that's, that's the kind of work that makes activism something so proud to be a part of. And I'm proud of what Bob did. And while I am not a man awash with money, I kicked a couple of bucks his way to help cover postage. I imagine a whole lot of people did, based on what Bob's early response was. And you know, it only takes one prosecutor, one, just one, to hail a war criminal, a murderer, okay, a murderer, into court and make him face an indictment handed down from a grand jury. And I will be proud, proud as punch, when that day comes. And you know what? I'm going to engage in a little bit of, you know, faith. Something that I don't indulge just a heck of a lot. I'm going to indulge in a little bit of faith and believe that somewhere out there, there is one competent prosecuting attorney with the nerve to stand up and like the blood of Abel shrieking from the sodden earth, cry out for justice. Congratulations, Bob Alexander. You put together a heck of an effort. And I'm very, very proud of you and all the people who joined you to do it. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that this is going to be an odd, nay, yea, verily, perhaps even strange little week. It's going to be laden with travel. I am leaving in the morning for Washington, D.C. Odds are there will be no show tomorrow evening. The stream will be run remotely by the intrepid Ben Birch in my absence, so that Agnes doesn't have to mess with anything and she can go about the business of being the full-time mommy that she is. And grandmother. Yeah, Granny Agnes. So I wouldn't bet on a show tomorrow evening. I would, however, bet on shows Wednesday and Thursday. And just as a refresher and a, hey, Bob, where are you going kind of moment, we're headed off to the Green Jobs Conference. An amazing confluence of progressive, liberal, pro-environment, pro-labor thinking in Washington, D.C. It will be held jointly at the Marriott Waldman Park. Wardman Park? Waldman Park? Wardman Park. I think I'm confusing Wardman with Paul Waldman of Media Matters. Marriott Wardman Park and the Omni Shoreham Hotel, whence we will be broadcasting. And I'm really, really excited about this. Nick Regalado will be attending with me. Also, from Cold River Mountain Watch, Matt Norpell and Rory will be with us, Rory McElmoyle. And I think we're going to create quite a little stir about the Coal River Wind Project, the attempt to save Coal River Mountain from its imminent doom at the hands of the sleazy greed merchants of Massey Energy and their ethically challenged, mentally twisted employees. I think we're going to make quite the stir. I also expect that we'll be talking to a lot of folks working in various and sundry different areas of the green jobs movement, because we're not just proposing green jobs in southern West Virginia. The Coal River Wind Project just happens to be the single most inspiring green jobs project in the country right now, but it is by far from the only one. And I hope we get, I hope I get to talk to Rick Smith, get to set eyes on him for the first time. And talk with him behind the microphone a little bit as well. What else? Well, that's the good news. The bad news is, Guy James will not, after all, be joining us there. Guy's wife took a fall. I don't want to give out too much confidential detail, but Guy's wife, the lovely Bess, took a fall, and I think, she broke her arm. And Guy, being the doting, dutiful, and committed family values husband that he really is. See, when liberals and progressives and Democrats talk about family values, this is a walk that we actually walk in addition to a talk that we actually talk. And Guy is not able to leave Bess's side, nor, if he suggested he ought, would I suggest that would be okay. I wouldn't leave Agnes's side either. Nor do I know any who would leave a loved one, even for something such as this. So, Guy will not be joining us. I expect that Mark Levine will be joining me on Wednesday and Thursday for his shows. And as I said, I hope to lay eyes on Rick Smith and maybe get an hour or two with him behind the microphone. I might try to, under the circumstances, and this is sort of al fresco at this point, I might try to do a little bit of Guy's slot, because I don't think he's going to be doing shows this week unless he tells me otherwise. I might try to pick up some of that slack as well. So that's, you know, some parts of this are in a state of flux, others are not. So really everything will be rerun programming tomorrow unless I should happen to get on the air by 6 p.m. Eastern time. But since I'm not meeting Guy at noonish or 12:30 at the hotel, that means I don't have to leave here at 5 a.m., which means I get to leave at a sane hour of the day, which means I probably won't be getting in the door at the hotel until later in the afternoon, which sort of puts the kibosh on me doing a live show tomorrow night. So I hope you'll forgive the absence, because I think the 2 days are going to be magnificent. And thanks to those of you who have helped in the effort for the horn to be there. We are there as a direct function of the sponsorship of Coal River Mountain Watch, as well as the Sierra Club. I'm attending as in my status as an activist and an affected local community member, thanks to the Sierra Club. Coal River Mountain Watch is making it possible for me to get there. Now, and one last, and I've got a call on, please hang on for just a second. Some of this is just housekeeping. I need to make this clear. That old email address that so many of you used for so very long, to wit, bob@headonradio.com, is no more. It's pining for the fjords. Frankly, in the course of everything else that is required to be paid for here, I couldn't afford it anymore. So that email is no more. If you wish to reach me by email, the easiest thing to do is simply email me at bobkincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. I have some work to do that may take some sort of customer service phone calling and stuff. I need to change the official go-to email address at PayPal to bobkincaid@gmail.com, which I'm sure will involve an hour or so on the line to Kuala Lumpur or wherever the PayPal call center is. They're very, don't get me wrong, they're very, very competent, very, very good people. It's just a bit of a lengthy process. So that's where that is. For those of you, just as a reminder, who wish to contribute to the Horn, have never done so, and do not like PayPal, you can always send your contributions to Head On, 1038 North Eisenhower, just like Ike, the president, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. So that's all of that. And thanks to the people who have made contributions that are going to make it possible to do everything that needs to be done in D.C. as well. Plus, you know, we're looking at doing other things as well. I expect some more broadcasting from D.C. toward the end of February, up into March as well. There's two more trips coming up. And we're still trying to work out a means whereby we can go and do the American Atheist Convention in Atlanta. That conversation is still ongoing. And there are other conversations for live broadcasting by the Horn that are taking place as well. All of that is made possible by you and your generous contributions. So just remember, anyway, if you want to send email henceforward, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com. As they say on that hateful little recorded voice on the telephone, please make a note of it. And let's, enough already, let's go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert, what's up? Happy Monday.
Oh, man. What?
Happy Monday.
I thought, I thought I missed some. I thought I missed more, but apparently.
Groundhog Day.
It is, well, same day, huh?
Yeah, well, then again, you know, the last 8 years have been like a Groundhog Day with an NC-17 rating and lots of violence.
So I do hope that we do see a prosecutor out there with a little bit of huevos, you know what I mean? We really need them to A, read the book, and then B, just do what comes naturally after reading the book and realizing what their position is.
Yeah, we do. But I want two or three in various states. I want George Bush to be like this traveling sideshow of prosecution that just goes and gets life sentences handed down in one state after the other. I realize that's a lot to hope for.
It is. Well, say hello to Paraguay. Yeah.
Yeah, a charming little space not too far from the Bolivian border. You know, we don't want, you know, now that he's not president anymore, George can go back to his former bad habits, and he doesn't want to be too far from the home of Bolivian flake and Bolivian marching powder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that brings it right back into the other. Man, you know, have the right wingers been just rambling incoherently on the freaking TV, or is it just
they have gone completely sprayed roach crazy. Just, you know, they're all speaking. I love you speaking in tongues.
Unbelievable. It's just, you know, they are fighting within themselves. I mean, you know, and they are exposing themselves for what they really are. But my goodness gracious, I mean, it's just sad. It's just sad to see that the Democrats were just whooped by just a bunch of petty, pathetic criminals. I mean, just greedy bastards, these guys, you know. They don't want it for us, you know. They want to choke the unions out, or, you know, and or make working class people, you know, sit there and suffer and starve, while, you know, oh, it's going to be corporate tax cuts and more tax breaks for these bastards who have already paid themselves, what, $20 billion? $20 billion. Bob, how many times do we have to go over million, billion, trillion?
I mean,
like, you know, not for nothing. You know what? I mean, nobody should have that much power in the world. No one human being should ever be able to have $1 billion. It's just too much power. But to sit there and have somebody be able to disperse $20 billion for bonuses for failing it's just unbelievable. Now, what, that's one thing I can say, oh, you know, at least Barack Obama, you know, I don't know, took out the ruler on it. I don't know what he's going to do about it other than, you know, look upset. But, you know, I really do hope that people one day will realize and seriously maybe just extinguish that whole mindset once and for all. That when you got, you know, $20 billion in a, you know, in what is it, they were going to put for railroad tracks or mass transit around the country, $20 billion. Now, that is so much money. That's a hell of a lot of railroad track. That's a hell of a lot of railroad trains. I mean, billions of dollars it's a phenomenal amount of money. And to sit there and, you know, lose track of it and constantly lose. I mean, how the hell do these people constantly lose track of anything? And then who the hell gives them a pencil and a calculator and a checkbook? I don't understand this. I don't understand how these people get away with it. They do that extra billing on the.
Forgot to carry the two.
Let's add a couple of zeros to that. Make sure we cover all the bets. Okay. I mean, it's the most unbelievable thing on the whole planet. I sit here and every.
Yeah, you know what I wish I had it handy. Let me. It'd be too much of a pain in the ass to try to get all the way to. But, you know, Albert, I'm a big fan of, that great 70s novelty songwriter, C.W. McCall.
Okay.
You ever remember, are you familiar with, this is the guy who wrote, Convoy and Wolf Creek Pass and, all just silly songs.
Okay.
But there's a song called Wolf Creek Pass. It's the story of, two truck drivers riding together when they're, brakes go out on the downhill side of 37, what he calls 37 miles of hell, called Wolf Creek Pass, which is up on the Great Divide.
Okay.
And as the truck careens down the highway out of control, the narrator of the song eventually says, So I commenced looking out the window, watching phone poles going by at the rate of 4 to the 7th power. I put 2 and 2 together and added 12 and carried 5 and come up with 62,000 telephone poles an hour. There you go.
Oh man, it's just unbelievable. And you know, and then you know, I just got to get it on because you know they'll sit there and they'll bitch about that, and they'll whine about that, and they'll sit there and you know you'll hear people talk about it. But you know, to ever imagine talking about the Pentagon's budget, to ever imagine sitting there and saying, you know, maybe we don't need to spend, oh, I don't know, $800 billion on the frickin' military every year. Because, you know, while $18 billion is a lot of money, and it's a frickin' ton of money to be given, you know, I don't know how many guys, you know, 8,000 guys, 5,000 guys, however you divide, you know, $18.4 billion. That's one thing I'd like to see. How much in general, like, Jesus, that's so much money. That's just unbelievable. But to sit there with that kind of money and then look at what the Pentagon does, And to look at our problems, I mean, you know, there comes a time, Bob, where, you know, Bob, you really may love, you know, X brand beer. But, you know, when the budget comes down and your family says, hey.
I'm a Dapper Dan man myself, but go ahead.
Whatever you enjoy. But, you know, when it comes down and you and Agnes look at each other and say, you know, we're going to have to not get that brand. We can't afford it and get food for the rest of the family and do what we need to do. Well, that's, you know. There are certain luxuries, I think, that we can afford, especially on the military front. And that's one thing I'd really like to start seeing discussed in the, you know, the national dialogue, is do we really need to be outspending the entire world combined on military power? Do we really need to be doing this? Do we really need the Pentagon to come up every, you know, 5 years or so, like they did, you know, the day before 9/11, and say, oh, we've misplaced $2.3 trillion. You know, I would think $2.3 trillion missing would have something to do or would have some sort of impact into the state of our economy today. Because how long can you just write off something like that? I mean, if you were going to, like, Bob, if you were making dirty phone calls to a 900 number, how long before you think Agnes would notice it on your bill?
We wouldn't get through a whole billing cycle. I'd just have this sort of shamefaced sort of thing going on. Bob, have you been calling 1-900-SPANK-ME again? Oh, did I say again? Oh, damn.
Seriously, reckoning would come before then. I don't understand how people think that they can get away with this kind of stuff and then, like, think that, oh, nobody's going to notice. It's like, having bad employees. That's what this is like. And we need to seriously start firing people. And I'll tell you what, including all of our, reborn heroes. While there are certain things that I really like about certain representatives that we have on certain boards and this and that, there's a lot of things that, well, let's just, let's just put brass tacks here. They are as guilty as the Republicans for the situation that we're in, because they also voted for deregulation, and they also voted for, blank checks in Iraq and all this other stuff. And, to really sit there and make any progress, okay, like once the boulder starts getting loose, you got to really let it, you really got to put your back into it. And, quite frankly, I understand some people have certain experiences and, we need them and this and this and that and every reason under the sun. But, there really has to be some sort of, I just got to say, us Democrats and us here on the left really cannot. I don't want to kill ourselves, I don't want to sit there and be like, shoot ourselves in the foot. But at the same time, we really got to, we got to pay up accounts. We have to settle these debts that we have, or we're just going to be, going forward with a cancer that's just never going to go away. It's always going to pop back. It's always going to come back. We got to go in there and cut this stuff out. We can sit there and the GOP is going to be sitting there spinning themselves. They're going to be whirling dervishires sitting there, spinning holes in the ground, fighting amongst themselves. David Duke freaking out, exposing all the right wing, racists to say, oh my God, this Michael Steele is Obama Jr. And, they're going to be killing themselves. So let them kill themselves while at the same time we sit there and, really take it to account, really sit there and, I don't know. Never allow another Joe Lieberman to rear his ugly head, I guess. You know what I mean?
You just had to go to Holy Joe, didn't you?
Well, hey, over the last few years, who's been dancing that, the third rail? Who's been sitting there, jumping back and forth over the line over and over and over again? And, he's not alone. And, while I told you, there are a lot of them I love and a lot of them are really smart, but, I don't know.
There's a bunch who aren't. There's a bunch I don't love, a bunch who aren't really smart. Joe Lieberman heads both, okay, both lists for me, especially as someone who once called himself a liberal. Yeah, I know, you can't, I'm glad, bless your heart, I appreciate that, Albert, just a little chuckle when you say Lieberman and liberal in the same sentence. Yeah, I know, it happens, it's automatic. Did you see this business about him going to the Alfalfa Club dinner?
No.
And frankly, I'm such a lowbrow, what did I get called by the guy at the Progressive Media Summit? A booger-eating hillbilly? I'm such a one of those that I have no idea what an Alfalfa Club is. I mean, when you go, do you have to have the really stupid cow lick up in the back, like, alfalfa? Well, never mind. Apparently one shows up in one's best evening gear. Your little pleated front shirt with your little pearl studs and satin lapel tuxedo and preferably a hand-tied bow tie. Anybody who gets that far up and can't tie their own damn bow tie needs a whipping. I say that because I'm actively involved in teaching my son the fine art of tying one's own bow tie. Because there are just some things that one needs to know. How to do a tracheotomy with a ballpoint pen, how to hand tie your own bow tie,
Yeah, so those things come in handy sometimes. You never know.
So, Holy Joe stands up to talk, Albert. And I want you to take a deep breath, open a fermented malt beverage, whatever it is that's going to help you hang on to reality, okay? I want your solemn word.
Oh, I hate to advocate drugs and violence and mayhem to anybody, but it's always worked for me.
Right, exactly. So Holy Joe gets up to talk. See, that's one of those things that makes Washington a fascinating place to me, because apparently Washington, D.C. is a place where Holy Joe Lieberman still has, you know, even a soupçon of credibility, which just boggles. Mm-hmm. And he stands up and he says, we had hoped Vice President Cheney would be here tonight. I hope it's not his back injury that's keeping him away. Apparently he heard it moving some things out of his office. Personally, I had no idea that water boards were so heavy. Help me, Albert. That's where the laugh track comes in.
What? You know, with friends like Joe Lieberman, he is just tasteless. He is such a, just a loathsome person. He really is. He's just hideous. Yeah, that's a joke. Let's joke. You know, I know.
Yeah, it's a real knee slapper, Paul.
Yeah.
Get out that's the like, jug band.
Yeah.
I had no idea waterboards were so heavy.
Yeah. What's next? Jokes about...
But then again, you know, it was Muslim people getting waterboarded, so, you know... They're not really human to Joe Lieberman anyway, so it probably is funny, and you and I just don't get it.
Maybe I can't tie my own bow. I can tie a regular tie, but a necktie, not a bow tie. So maybe that might be it.
Nah, because I can, and it's still not working.
Maybe that's not it then.
Waterboards. Joking about waterboards.
Well, it's like joking about, you know.
You know, see, that's another one of those Hannah Arendt banality of evil kind of moments. You know, I'm all for free speech and everything. Mm-hmm. But when your free speech, I mean, if Joe, well, first, Joe never would have done it. But what would have been the response if Joe had gotten up and told a Holocaust joke? Is there such a thing as a Holocaust joke? I mean, and this from the most irreverent man on earth, okay, Albert? I mean, I just am.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that great old joke about Jesus standing there teaching the crowds, and he says, "Let that person who is without sin cast the first stone," and all of a sudden a rock comes hurtling up from the back of the crowd and whacks him, and he, ow, it really hurt. And he looks in the back of the crowd and goes, "Honestly, Mom, sometimes you really piss me off." Okay, I mean, that's me.
Yeah.
I don't think there are any Holocaust jokes. And if there are, there shouldn't be.
No.
Because it's not funny. It's horror on a level that is incomprehensibly evil. Which is, by the way, one of those things that makes incomprehensible the fact that Pope Benny the Rat has rehabilitated some Holocaust-denying bishops. But more on that later.
Hallelujah.
You know, Opus Dei, whatever. My daddy plays dominoes better than your daddy plays dominoes. Amen. But if Joe had gotten up and told a Holocaust joke instead of a joke about torturing Muslims, would that have been acceptable in the alfalfa club crowd? I mean, I know this is not what you're called about, but, you know, Albert, we have some pretty wide-ranging conversations, and I'm just, because I've been seething for a couple of days at this waterboarding jokes. I mean, what does he follow with, a Katrina joke?
No, a UN school bomb airstrike joke. You can make jokes about that, too, and, you know, make some West Bank jokes and, you know, those kind of Gaza Strip jokes. Those would be, yeah, that would be I could admire that, too. He's ridiculous.
Hey, why aren't there any strippers in the Gaza Strip? Because they don't have any arms and legs. They got blown up. Hell, 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 yuck, 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 yuck.
Ba-dum-bum. Yep, no doubt. That's he's a special breed. I'll tell you what, that guy is just ridiculous. That guy's unbelievable. and you know, he takes his part in it, and that's another, you know, and I know these guys, you know, they're senators, and so they're above the law and everything else like that, and you know, and they frolic around in the city state of Washington D.C., and you know, they don't care, you know, they don't care anything about pride. They don't use that to, you know, rope in the dummies. You know, they use those things as tools to manipulate and, you know, twist and contort, you know, us. And, you know, when it comes time to pay the bill, this is what we're talking about, even, you know, with the bailout and this and the Joe Lieberman torture jokes. You know, these are the things that we're going to have to pay. You know, I don't want to sit here and hear, oh, why do they hate us? You know, I don't want to sit here and hear that ever again. You know, I mean,
they hate us because Joe Lieberman stands up at the Alfalfa Club and makes jokes about torturing them. I mean, are we clear on that now? You're right. That question need never be asked again.
Yeah. I mean, it's what? What did he just say? Is he serious? And that brings me right back. You know, I'll tell you what, when I heard your recount of Lieberman, the one thing that popped into my head is, oh, no weapons of mass destruction over here. There either, with him looking between his, you know, looking at his ass, and just look, it's like, you know, he really did that. He has to be. No, he has to be. He has to go to jail. He has to. You can't sit there and just do such a hideous, like, just lack of consciousness and just complete and utter just disregard for, like, the murder and death that you've caused. Torturing people, cutting their, you know, and that's another thing. We're fair. We're liberals. We're fair. What the hell's Obama doing keeping this rendition program open? This is a disgrace. This is a disgrace. Yeah, right. Close down Gitmo. Gitmo was a freaking store window, you know, freaking display. That's what Gitmo was. You know, what the hell about all these castles in Transylvania where they, you know, who knows what the hell they do to people? You know, I mean, to sit there and have him, see, this is the audacity of hope my ass. To sit here and have him keep these things, you know, as viable alternatives for some, you know, I would think grabbing some dude, putting him in a straitjacket, narking him up with some sodium pentothal, putting him in a C-130 and bringing him to the United States to stand trial for some sort of terrorism charges would be the way to handle somebody. All right? You could sit there, I mean, they do these kinds of things every day. Let a cop do their job, you know. Let the cops do their job. Yeah, let the cop do their job and interrogate these guys. They know how to do interrogations. Oh, we got to torture them, and what are we going to hear? We're going to hear the things we want to hear. And what are we going to do about it? We're going to stop fictitious events from happening and then claiming that responsibility, you know, see, it works. What the hell kind of circular logic is that? I hear more sense coming out of those six-year-old preachers, okay, that go stand on the street and tell everybody they're going to hell than I do about sitting there and and making some rationale about frickin' torture.
Okay, so this is probably not the time to bring up David Vitter's argument, right?
David Vitter.
You know, Diaper Dave? Senator David Vitter, Louisiana?
Yeah,
guy who hires hookers.
Yeah, what'd he do now?
He's trying to come up with a solution for what we do with people like the Uyghurs in Guantanamo, you know, people who did absolutely nothing wrong that we've tortured and held in solitary confinement for, mm-hmm. you know, eight years.
8 years?
Yeah. Yeah, we're coming up on eight. Right now it's only 7 and change, Albert. Well, never mind. Let's just listen to Diaper Dave. We hope. Here we go.
All right. You're getting ready to go overseas, right?
Yeah, to Gitmo.
What's going on in Gitmo? What are you going to see? What do you hope to learn?
About 5 U.S. senators are going there. Obviously, we're looking, asking a lot of questions in light of President Obama's plan to close Gitmo in about a year. And my top question is, okay, what are we going to do with these very, very dangerous terrorists? We need the ability to deal with these folks adequately. To me, that has to include...
Send them to a hooker. No, sorry, wrong answer.
The ability to detain some without trial, to continue proper interrogation. And if that's going to be in this country now, we need to understand how that's going to happen properly.
I have heard people say that that they believe that
we're not to the fun part yet. Trust me.
The idea of closing Gitmo was something that sounded good, but in reality, it's immensely complex to try to do it. It may actually take years to come up with a solution.
Well, at a minimum, he said 1 year, and you're right, it could be more than that. And I think if we're going to do it right, at a minimum, I'd like to have Gitmo stay open, but certainly we need detention facilities where we can detain dangerous terrorists without trial, continue to interrogate them. So the question is where, under what authority, in this country, how do we deal with that?
Mm-hmm. You got it. I mean, I'm not trying to just, you know, on your shoes or anything, Albert, but these guys aren't going away, brother.
No. Oh, no.
Yeah, we need somewhere that we can What was that phrase? Where we can detain dangerous terrorists without trial.
Mm-hmm.
And continue to waterboard them. I mean, he said interrogate them.
Or give them the Bush treatment. As that other just filthy, disgusting. I mean, you know, honestly, that David Yu.
John Yu.
John Yu.
Yeah, David Addington, John Yu. I know that. They all run together. Lucky for them, though, however, Albert, the Bush administration or former employees thereof have set up their own Bush-Cheney alumni webpage. This is almost as nasty and stupid as, maybe the clean coal carolers. I haven't heard anything this stupid since then.
Bob, it's too much.
Am I hurt? I'm sorry, Albert. I don't mean to hurt you, brother.
It's not you. It's just. It's so. Oh my goodness gracious! You know, it's just unbelievable. It is just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. This is such a. It's a wacky Monday, or just a wacky 2009. Because it ever since New Year's. I mean, it's been crazy before then, but. Since New Year's, it's on 11 now. Everything's on 11. It's just a tad over, it's just blowing us out of the water with the crazy. It's just mad. What the hell is?
I know, and not that I'm encouraging anybody to go there, but just so we'll get it out there into the sort of internet zeitgeist. These thugs. These evil jackasses set their website up at the numeral 4, the numeral 3, alumni.com, 43alumni.com. Is that kind of like 13 monkeys?
Oh, my God. It feels like 12 monkeys to me.
I mean, yeah, 12 monkeys. Sorry, wrong monkeys. By the way, I got to ask you, Albert. We go all over the place. Did you watch any of the Super Bowl last night?
No, sir.
Okay, they had a Castrol GTX ad, or a Castrol motor oil ad, that had all these chimpanzees running around doing car repairs and putting on welding helmets and stuff like that. I swear it was like a garage full of George Bushes. Except the chimpanzees appeared to at least be, for film purposes, competent.
Yeah, I can't agree with you. I'm sorry, buddy. I can never give George Bush the incompetent button. It's just been too well orchestrated.
Well, okay. No, you're right.
This SOB is a hardcore criminal. He's a gangster. And, you know, it's just...
Living the real thug life.
He is, seriously, I mean, honestly, I mean, look at it. I mean, kings and barons and lords, and they've always been just thugs and criminals and petty thieves, or massive thieves, I should say. This is the kind of person that is attracted to that kind of power. And I really, just for historical justice, just in case, you know, the next people that hear this is 10,000 years from now after, you know, we're long, long gone. You know, this son of a bitch is just one of many. You know, that whole gang, man, this whole gang are just elite thugs. They don't care about nothing. And, you know, I got to say, you know, we'll see. We'll see what Barack Obama does. And I hope he does something. I hope he does something right, and I hope he brings righteousness back to the freaking species. But, you know, if I'm just not giving him any, I'm not giving him any slack either.
No passes.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, he's got to clean up. It's just how it is. And you know, it's, you know, the house is a mess. It should have humbled.
At the very least, I've sort of caught onto this notion, and I like it. If we can't have open investigation and prosecution of the Bush administration, can we at least have a South Africa-style Truth and Reconciliation Commission?
Just for the species. My goodness. I mean, just for the species.
There you go.
Just to create the
record and put in an airtight, fireproof time capsule or something. So, I mean, or you know, vault, something where it can, where this level of evil can never be forgotten. You know, where maybe it'll be learned worldwide enough that if George Bush goes walking down the street somewhere besides right-wing America, that little children will point at him and shriek and hide their faces in the skirts of their mommies.
To tell scary stories about him and to sit there and, like, forever paint that whole mindset, just the whole mindset of that kind of person and the people that could, you know, enable that to literally just, you know, throw it on the ash heap, to put it into Devil's Hill and to sit there and, you know, put it where it belongs, and it belongs in garbage. It belongs in, you know, the things you don't touch. You don't eat raw poultry. I think everybody knows that. And I get a little skeezed out if I'm washing and handling poultry, and I don't want salmonella. So we need to make Bush at least, you know, and that whole regime and everything about it, it's just all got to go. And when that sickness pops up on our side, we have to we have to treat it. We can't sit there and allow it to continue and the infection to, you know, fester. We just can't. It can't be done. I think the gravity of, you know, my rambling prophets, you know, prophecies from years and years ago, I think those kinds of, you know, I think that whole mind, that whole paradigm that's coming to be, it's getting more apparent every day. If you listen to the financial news and you listen to the, you know, world financial news and all these other things, you are like this is real. The situation we're facing is going to be severe. And, you know, while we certainly have to deal with everything, you know, we got to deal with, you know, you know what needs to be done because you know what the Republicans are fighting against. You know, they want us to fail. Sure they do, because they want to, you know, Rush Limbaugh wants to have slaves. He does. He's that kind of mindset. That's the kind of my foot. You want to have people just, you know, waiting on you hand and foot. You want to be royalty. You want your own little fiefdoms. They want to be able to destroy everything. This is like, you know, Grover Norquist. This SOB is still on TV. Okay, sitting here rambling. I mean, and I don't catch a lot, but I only get the, you know, the creme de la creme of the scum. And I'll tell you what, you know, This guy's telling us how to run the economy. Grover Norquist is going to sit here and tell us how to run the economy. Him, the guy who wanted to take this country's government and take it and destroy and get it so sick that it could be drugged into a bathtub and drowned.
Yep.
I mean, this guy is going to sit here and tell us, like, anything. He's another one.
Well,
you know,
yeah, whether it's him or William Crystal or, you know, pick one. All these people who have been congenitally, pathologically, persistently wrong about everything. How many more tries do they get?
That's what we're talking about last time. You know, we need a rating system or something on these people. We need to sit there and, you know, I hope our collective, you know, attention span is getting greater, and I hope we don't, you know, lose track of this stuff. And I do know it can be overwhelming for just about anybody, especially in these, you know, financial times that we're in. But my goodness gracious, these people are ridiculously just—they are evil, and I hate to sit there and label anything that, you know, that easily. But you know, when your entire, you know.
Well, ill-intended doesn't work. made a few, you know, mistakes were made. Now we're past that. So what are you left with but things like malevolent, evil, poison souled? I mean, you know, you're really sort of given the synonyms a workout for evil.
Because the stuff can't, I mean, it can't be everything by accident. You know, and this is what gives rise to conspiracy theories, and, you know, not for nothing, I do enjoy a good one, especially if it's a good one. And I know people like, you know, they like to sit there and, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater anytime anybody brings it up. But, you know, when we talk about conspiracy theories, you know, it's just basically saying, Karl Rove and Grover Norquist, you know, seem to have benefited from, you know, operating together. You know, you think they ever talked about it? I mean, look. Now, he didn't show up, did he? Wasn't he supposed to show up or something like that today? Or?
Oh, it was today, wasn't it?
Was it? I don't know.
I think it was. You know, I do believe it was.
Did he show up? Did he? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I have to go to freaking jury duty. This dude doesn't have to sit there and answer Congress? Are you kidding me? Are you serious? I mean, if I get a parking ticket, you know, I can lose my license if I don't pay for it. This guy can sit here and tell you I'm not going to Congress to answer any of your freaking questions. What? This has got to stop. These people are not royal. They're not above the law. Don't they understand this? If Bob Kincaid's not above the law, and Albert's not above the law, then they're not above the law. And that's the whole, isn't that the beauty of our government? Isn't that what it's supposed to be? That it's, you know.
You mean a nation of laws and not of men, which one sees inscribed inside courthouses across the fruited plain? That?
Just the way we were trained in school to believe that this country and the way that human beings should be is. They're everything, they're the antithesis of that. They're everything that's wrong. And to sit there and, you know, and I really do, I do believe in my heart of hearts, you know, I got a lot of hope in me. I do believe that, you know, that people are going to, I do believe, I think in a way, I bet Bush, as crazy as this crap has been, I bet Bush gets brought up on charges. It's just going to be, what we're going to be facing soon is going to be too painful to not. People are going to demand it, and that's why, in a sense, that's why, you know, I've...
Well, let me make that deeper level inquiry with you then, Albert.
Okay.
People are going to demand it. How?
Sure.
And I'm not being an ass, okay? How are people going to demand it? Because, as we've already established, these murderous thugs, these punks, these people are people who are, I mean, they wake up wrong, they go to bed wrong, they live wrong, everything they do is wrong, aren't going away. And it's going to get bad enough that we're going to demand it.
Yes. Yeah.
What's it take? What's it take?
Well, it takes more pain, probably. It's going to take more pain. It's going to take more truth. And I know these are, you know, ambiguous, but what I'm kind of getting at is as these deeds, you know, like it's like, you know, coming home. And, you know, it's like coming home to sit there and, you know, when the chickens come home to roost and when you sit here and leave your kids, you know, what have you, you know, and you go to Washington, D.C., you take Agnes with you and your kids and you come back and you see the front yard. Well, people right now are just barely seeing the front yard. They don't see that the walls are kicked out of the house. They don't see the panties all over the place and the, you know, this and this and this and the drugs everywhere. I mean, like the mess, you know, they don't see that somebody lit a fire in your living room, burnt a hole through the floor. I mean, like the thing is once people get to come into the house and really start seeing, oh, my God, holy crap, I don't have a job. You know, I mean, I hope that like nature has to be on our side, right, in the coming years. If we start getting droughts and this and that and all this other crap and more storms, which these storms keep happening, you know, maybe if they keep busting up our petroleum light pipelines and all this other stuff and we can't get the energy and Barack Obama starts twiddling his thumbs and starts playing politics and going to dinner with Rush Limbaugh, if we start seeing all this kind of crap happening, okay, I mean, it's going to have to take a perfect storm in a sense. But if we do, and heck, you know how it is to bet against Murphy. And, you know, if that could,
yeah.
Right? If this kind of stuff happens, And, you know, there's going to be, and people are going to freaking be freaked out. I mean, we got 300 million people in this country.
Macy's, of all people, Macy's, Albert, Macy's laid off 7,000 people today.
Well, of course, they sell outrageously overpriced clothing. I mean, and that's the thing is these people that, you know, like the credit card world. I mean, like there's tons of documentaries. Please, Nabalister.com, look under documentaries. Sit there and just because you can't get your hands on all these things without the internet. And, you know, this is our saving grace because now people can be educated and educate themselves, you know, instead of sitting there watching, you know, the news that's going to show you the same crap all the time, you know, turn it off. Put on the internet. Sit there and go and watch a documentary about what happened in Gaza or go watch a, you know, documentary about what happened in terms of the debt. And what happened in terms of, I mean, heck, even you, if you miss 60 Minutes, go watch what 60 Minutes in terms of how Morgan Stanley rigged the oil markets and all these other companies sitting there. Heck, maybe they even created this No, they didn't create that. But maybe they put a role in, you know, spreading that just to make people like myself or whatever that pay attention to supply and demand to make them sit there and go, oh, my God, maybe we're going to be running out of oil soon. And we probably are definitely going to be running out of oil soon, I mean, unless it's an abiotic product. But, you know, when we sit here and look at a whole this whole system of, you know, of crooks and thieves, and now when it's going to sit here and impact, you know, when it doesn't impact you, what do you care? That's the thing, is people don't care. Oh, what big deal. Oh, so what? Yeah, all right. Oh, they got us. Oh, that health insurance guy got $1 billion severance package. A billion dollar severance package. Are you kidding me?
Oh, there's bailout money news today.
More bailout. Okay. Oh, please. Hang on. Let me take a drink.
Dude, you know, let me put my hand behind my head and do the, you know, elbow foul at you because it's going to take more than a swig. I asked earlier if you watched the Super Bowl, and you didn't, and that's okay.
No.
Can't blame you. Bank of America got $20 billion a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Because it was on the verge of death. I mean, it was, you know, Monty Python skit time, you know, coughing up blood on the porch.
Mm-hmm.
It total bailout money for Bank of America is $45 billion now. Yesterday, of course, was Super Bowl Sunday. Bank of America is an NFL corporate sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And Bank of America dropped $10 million on a Super Bowl party. The tents that Bank of America had all by themselves, just the tents, 800 large. And I suppose if you were some sort of conservative or wingnut, you might say, and this is not, I'm not strawmanning you, okay? But you might say, well, you know, Bob, it's not fair to make an argument about health care and put it side by side with $800,000 worth of rented tents at Raymond James Stadium. They're not the same thing. And maybe that's a valid argument, but on a much deeper level, there's no way in hell that it is. You know what I'm saying, Albert? 40, you know, because we started this phone call talking about how many times do we have to talk about millions and billions and trillions? What comes after trillions?
Quadrillion.
Yes, quadrillions, I think. Right.
We don't even have to go there.
That's just a word. That's a word like Googleplex.
Googleplex. Yeah, ooh. You owe me a beer, Bob.
Okay, you beat me to it. I'm there for you. Or, you know, Avogadro's number.
Mm-hmm.
A number so huge, we just gave it the guy's name.
Yeah.
800, but can is it just off limits? Because this goes to that anger that you're describing, this wake-up call to the American people. And I'm sure now that this is out and has been busted, there will be great indignance in the media, or not indignance by the media, but great manifestations of popular indignance.
I hope so.
I do too, but I also don't want to let that be a substitute for actual fury.
You know, honestly, maybe it's just an epiphany, but I think that in order for these people that get these billions of dollars, in order for them to, like, survive this, in order for them, because I'm going to tell you, you know, like the common man, you and I talk about this, and, you know, there are more people that don't pay attention to this, and eventually when the chickens come home to roost, they're going to, you know, they're going to be like, what the hell just happened, and they're going to freak out. Maybe, perhaps, maybe, just maybe, these same banks that get this, maybe they'll be forced to press the reset button, and we can start over. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe
I do know what you're saying, Albert. And there's something else that complicates this issue. The story that I'm looking at, and what this was a 5-day carnival.
Yeah.
It was like, I guess what, the NFL experience or some such as that. They do this at every Super Bowl. And there were 850,000 square feet of sports games, interactive entertainment attractions. You couldn't turn around without seeing a Bank of America logo, and they had folks in little mini tents shilling the attendees to sign up for football themed, NFL themed banking products, according to ABC News. But the photograph I'm looking at has a couple of guys in what appear to be polo shirts staffing these tables. Now, Bank of America spent that money, that bailout money, just thumbed their noses at us with it. But by the same token, hypothetically speaking, if you walk up to where they're trying to get you to fill out a form so you can get your NFL checkbook or your commemorative Steelers or Cardinals checkbook cover or whatever, and you say to him, hey, you work for Bank of America. They took, this is bailout money. What do you do when the guy looks at you and goes, you know what? I'm happy to have a job. I would do this. I would do this every day of the year as long as I get to make my mortgage payment.
Yeah. Oh, there's always that. There's always that twist in there, isn't there? Yeah.
I'm just trying to be honest with myself.
Yeah.
Because those dudes inside that stupid little football point of a football shaped tent are not to blame for this.
No.
And Bank of America, being sleazy and corporate, would find a way to put those guys on the street. If in fact they're not temp workers, I'm guessing they're probably not the tellers from the local branches. That's guessing. I could be wrong.
I was putting my money on temp, so I think. Yeah, right. Have to find that out, but I'm probably temp workers. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
But it's still it doesn't stop being infuriating.
No, it certainly isn't. And I'll tell you, this might have, you know, we might have to pressure some senators or congressmen or somebody to create some sort of Tower of Babel legislation. You know, and let's put the Bible to good use and like. Maybe there should be some sort of cap to how, you know, how tall you can build a tower, and you know, to how much illusion you can sit there and stack underneath something, you know, in terms of erecting it. They're sitting here shilling out, you know, how many people went to the football game? 100,000, 120,000, 200,000 people went, maybe sit in the parking lot, whatever. What is that? They're going to sit here and blow how much money? $8 million, $80 million, whatever, $18 million on tents and this and that, refreshments and buttons and stupid polo shirts for their temp employees and the salaries that they got to pay. They're going to sit here and do that while their entire, you know, notebook of investments is completely just worthless. They're going to sit here and, you know, this is the whole thing about, you know, this fiat currency. I got to know, Bob. How many fiat currencies are still around? There's been, what, 3,000, 6,000 of them over time, over history, been created. How many of them are still around? This is the thing when I talk about, you know, when people are going to be outraged. People are going to have to wind up eventually being completely outraged when their money is not worth anything. When they sit there and, you know, like when it comes down to, you know, where they're going to have to change the monetary system to what, credits or some other malarkey or some other sort of illusion. But, you know, how long can you foster an illusion that just sits there and self-perpetuates and gives itself, you know, I mean, Who's going to refuse Bank of America? They're going to refuse Bank of America. I thought they're too big to fail. They're too big to fail this, or they're too big to put in jail, and they're too big to do this, and they're too big to hold accountable, and they're too big for anything else. So we'll just sit there and give them more and more money because our money's... Oh, that's right.
So they've basically become the alchemist's dream. The Bank of America, AIG, Citi, all the... In essence, they have become perpetual motion machines.
Yeah. Oh, man, I wish we could make a. I wish we could hook up some cables to them and generate some electricity. Because that's about, you know, they're freaking worthless, these people. They're worthless on so many levels. They are the marketers that Bill Hicks, the prophet, peace be upon him, warned us about. They are exactly these people. They'll sit there, and the people, the yes men, and the little guys, and the, you know, and the businessmen and the business suits, looking all business like and talking business meeting and all the other crap. You know, these guys are ridiculously stupid, as Kids in the Hall, you know, pointed out. To sit there and make these investments because, oh, whoa, well, heck, this is a 30% return, or this is a this and this is a that, and then on top of it, to sit there and buy into, I mean, I'm surprised Bank of America doesn't own two sports franchises already. I don't understand, like, the level of mishmash, jingle, just everything. It's freaking idiocracy. That's all this. That's all you can say. This is just idiocracy.
Carl's Jr.
It is. It's Carl's Jr. It's Carl's Jr. everywhere. It's Carl's Jr. and it's Starbucks and it's, you know, it's Brondo. This is just one big glop of crap. You know, I tell you what, you know, people are going to say, they're probably not going to be too outraged about the whole, you know, buying tents. I hope they get outraged. I really do hope they get outraged over these bonuses. Because I'll tell you what, Bob, how many bonuses have you ever seen?
My bonuses usually came at the holiday time of year and involved either ham or turkey.
Or basket with fruit in it.
Yeah, or, you know, the ubiquitous Hickory Farms sampler. You know, with some pasteurized product, cheese food spread product, with the outline of the state of Wisconsin, ironically stamped on it, and a stick of grease.
It's come down to this, like, you heard these guys squawking about this. Remember, they were squawking about, oh, we're going to get our bonuses, and Bank of America is the actual, I believe Bank of America is the one that gave the bonuses instead of January when they got their bailout money. They gave the bonuses in, excellent, they gave the bonuses in December because they can. They can arbitrarily just.
Yeah, because they're bonuses.
Yeah, they'll do anything for their bonuses because their bonuses is free money.
But that's the query that I made a few nights ago. Aren't those, I mean, there are gifts, for instance, that gift certificate for a frozen turkey of up to 22 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
That's a gift. That is a holiday gift. That is, everybody gets one. It is not tied to performance.
Yep.
Bonuses, however, are supposed to be performance-based, are they not?
I would imagine so.
I mean, to be fair, I've been involved in processes where there were things called merit raises, and I got them. But this just given a, I don't know. I can't wrap my head around it. It's unfathomable.
Yeah, it's Googleplex.
Yeah, it's an Avogadro.
Yeah, it's right in, you know, it's right in your face. It's right in everybody's face. It's so much in your face you don't believe that they have the audacity to do this to you. It's like if someone ever threw a drink on you or spit in your face, you just, for a second, you just be sitting there going, what the hell just happened? And I think that's the stage that we're at right now. I think we're at this stage right now in terms of humanity. We're sitting there coming home and, you know, there's bras hanging off the trees and the, you know, the cars on blocks upside down on his roof. And
every spring the toilets explode.
And I think people are going to sit here and, you know, I believe this reckoning is going to come. I mean, it's been coming for years. It was coming when Bush was still in office because if it didn't, we wouldn't have Barack Hussein Obama as president. Okay, so I think that, I don't think that Barack Hussein Obama being president is going to be, it's going to calm down for a year or so. But I tell you what, the fire's already been lit, and the best wood to start a fire with is wood that's already been burnt. So, I mean, you know, I think that if Barack Obama doesn't do everything that we're dreaming him to do, and while that might be a little bit, you know, Pollyannish or what have you, I do believe that if we don't sit there and see some real progress and some real, and I think he might. Let's not ruin it. Let's not put it out there and ruin it. But he might sit there and, reassess the tax brackets of the people that would get bonuses that don't include a Butterball brand only turkey. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
you got Butterball? Oh wow, I got Pilgrim's Pride. Off-brand.
It's Butterball, just different wrapper. It's the same crap.
Yeah, that's what they tried to tell me.
Yeah. It's just a different. It's a different proprietary solution injection. Blah blah blah. Seriously though, I really do think that it's going to be one of those things where I hope him saying, "What the hell do you guys think you're doing?" was going to turn into, I haven't forgotten about that. Your asses are going to have some problems. If you made, X amount, this cap. Yeah, because, Bob, when was the last time you paid capital gains and you didn't sell a house? When was the last time, these people that sit there and get, if you pay your taxes quarterly, I understand taxes are get a little bit crazy. But, when we have how many reports and over how many years has these reports came out, and they just came out again. I just remember just perusing just the headline. Oh, look, more studies showing that most of the corporations in this country don't pay income tax or taxes or whatever. They don't pay these things. They sit there. I mean, they wind up, these corporations that make hundreds of billions of dollars will pay less in tax than you. And, they sit there and go, but they provide jobs. That's not an excuse to sit there and not pay for to rebuild the roads that they sit there and made all this, this profit off of. And to sit there and, because, even though most of this money that is in Wall Street is just an illusion, there's a lot of it that also has to do with, hard materials. And these materials need to be moved, and that movement causes wear and tear. So we've had bridges falling down and roads falling apart. And it's like, that's the other thing. I just, this is just a local local gripe that I got to say, about these people that build these roads. Why don't you start building these roads correctly? Correctly. I know they take a lot of wear and tear, but why don't you build them correctly? You know that certain places like Wisconsin get negative below 30 below zero? Then build these freaking roads with like they used to back in the 50s, okay? Where these roads that are from the 50s, these concrete slabs that had expansion joints and all this other stuff, these roads are still there. They're still there. The freaking Romans knew how to build roads. Like at the very minimum, we got to get we.
Yeah, we don't even have to mention the Autobahn now, do we?
No, we don't have. No, let's not do that. But I just got to say that we as consumers, because in a sense we're consumer citizens, that we literally really have to get out of this mindset in terms of this replacement service economy. This crap that don't forget, Dick Cheney tried to sell us this bull crap. Remember this? And everybody was going to make eBay millionaires, and there was going to be a service economy. Phil Graham was rambling his...
Yeah, frisbees and wheat checks for everybody, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And then so what happened is these corporations, right, they sit there and they build these machines to fail, specifically fail after X amount of uses. And don't tell me they haven't, because I've taken apart my washing machine, and I can tell you right now that there's no reason for these things to fail other than that they build them for a certain level of...
two words. Nylon gears.
Nylon, exactly. Are you kidding me? Come on now. What are you doing with nylon gears and little tiny pinholes in a washing machine? Washing machines wash out grease and dirt and scum, and that stuff builds up, and it pokes a little hole. It clogs the hole, the little pinhole, and then what happens? And then the sensor gets tripped, and it gets the sensor wet, and it kills it, and the whole machine's dead. I've had, it's just like, we need to build things that last. That's another thing we need. We need to build things that last. My grandmother, who's peace be upon her as well, who's hanging out with Bill Hicks, hopefully smoking big spliffs up in heaven or wherever, all right, or the third ring of Jupiter, we're going to sit there and, I still have her can opener.
Yeah, I know. I got a house full of that stuff.
I'm serious. And it works. And, I would go get a new one, but it works. So why should I? And, you know, I know that the executives don't want to hear that, but that's what we need as consumers. When we listen, if you put your 40, 50, 100,000 hours in a year at somebody, you know, like that, you would imagine that the money that the work you put in is going to last for a little bit. It's going to sit there and, you know, help you buy something that's going to last you. I mean, if you got to constantly replace your can opener and constantly replace your major appliances because, you know, these companies need their quarterly frickin' earnings to be, you know, X amount of dollars so they can pay off their dividends, what the hell kind of sustainability are you ever going to reach?
And that's the point, isn't it? It isn't designed to be sustainable, Albert.
It isn't. Exactly. And you know,
it is designed in sustainability. I mean, just from a sort of cosmic consciousness thing, if you will.
Yeah.
When you come home from work and your precious little kid looks at you and goes, Daddy, what do you do for a living? Well, honey, Daddy makes stuff that will break down in 5 years.
Yeah.
And you're going to end your allotted 70 with that? What'd you do with your life, Bob? Made stuff that breaks down in 5 years.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. And you know, the whole thing is if the prophet Bill Hicks was completely correct, and this is just all just a ride, you know, if this is just a ride, then we need to, when we're here on the ride, we need to make sure that the ride stays healthy so we can ride it as long as possible. No? Who the hell sits there and puts gasoline on their little sledding hill as a kid and, you know, burns all the snow away? Nobody does that because you want a sled. You got to make it sustainable. You know, if the gods smile upon us and the crops are good and all this other stuff happens and, you know, we have extra, then we should put that extra away and save it. So the next time where they're not going to be smiling upon us and their crops aren't going to be as good. I mean, this stuff is fundamental mechanics that you would have to have and to succeed in any video game made in the last 20 years, okay? And if you can't even sit there and run your civilization as you would a freaking video game, then what the hell? I don't even know if you need, do we deserve to continue? Do we? If we can't sit here and figure out how to freaking get ourselves around.
Yeah, but deserve is a question freighted with entitlement.
Mm.
I don't know if it's necessarily the right question, but it's because deserve and justice, you know, and man, those words are intellectual dynamite. And they send you scurrying off to people like Socrates to start all over again. Because, you know, there was Socrates living in the middle of the world's first and greatest democracy, and he hated it. And they killed him. They killed him on technical trumped-up charge of corrupting the youth. But on the real thing behind it was that he was going around and making people think. And one of the things he made people think regarding was the concept of justice. You know, 500 years before Yeshua walked the benighted sands of the Middle East, Socrates propounded the idea of you have to love your enemy. And that went really not very well with the Athenian government at all. And he asked questions about, you know, what does it mean to be just? What does it mean to be a just man? Because there are pat answers, but if you just take a little fingernail and you kind of scratch at it, it's the Maltese Falcon all over again. It's lead, the stuff that dreams are made of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know that we can talk about deserving. I'm not limiting the terms of the conversation, you understand, Albert. But I do know that from a more utilitarian utilitarian angle, we can talk about what is and is not going to advance the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've seen the story of stuff. Most of the Horn audience has seen the story of stuff. And this, the idea of creating the consumer culture, which was a deliberate act in the early 50s, is not designed to be sustainable. It's the grasshopper's half of the story of the grasshopper and the ant.
That's right. And that's,
you know, that goes back. I love the fact that we're having this conversation or this portion of it, because I got a feeling that this is going to be at the heart and soul of what's going on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday in Washington, D.C.
Yes, sir, and I hope it carries over, and I really do. And I, you know, one thing that makes me a little nervous because I've been to a few shows like that, and one thing that just makes me a little bit nervous is just my, you know, natural, you know,
skepticism,
you know, is just in a sense, you know, like these guys are, a lot of those guys that are going to be there are salesmen. And sometimes a salesman, you know, it doesn't matter if there's something better around the corner. It's what he's got to sell, so that's what he's going to sell. So I just, you know, and I just hope that I do think that the salesmen that sell these products are at least they have their heart in the right place. So maybe they.
Well, I think there's going to be some of that, Albert. But having seen the agenda for this thing, it is going to be a lot more, at least on its surface, and I have no reason to doubt that it doesn't go clean to the bone. It's going to be a lot more focused on. Ideas.
Good.
And ideas putting and then taking the ideas and making them concrete.
Excellent. That's what we need.
It's all closed up. I mean, you couldn't wedge your way into this with a shoehorn. But if you go to Green Jobs Conference .org, as I just did, and you click on there's a Green Jobs Expo, of course, but there are also a number of workshops. I mean, just listen to this. This is idea. This really is idea based. Green for All, Prison Reentry, and Green Jobs.
Mm.
Regional Climate Policy Cooperation, Collaboration, and Challenges. And I like this. Green means more than windmills. How do we make green chemistry products and practices safer and healthier for all?
I like that.
Greening our nation's capital? Well, I've got an immediate answer for that one. Quit capitulating to right-wing thugs who hate the idea that you're going to do a little bit of work on the National Mall. But, you know, I'm crazy. Here's one that me knowing you, this is going to be one of those when Albert's head hits the pillow, Albert's head's still going to be spinning. Sustainable Supply Chain 101.
You know, I'll tell you what, the kind of people that are going to be involved in the kind of people that are going to be involved in the conference, I think you're going to really, you know, and I hope you pull some of that dynamite home for me, because I just want it to blow my head off, because that's what I just need that. I need to blow my head off with hope and sane, rational approaches and thoughts.
Yeah, the whole Zen master slap on the back of the head kind of thing, right?
I need that. I do, because it can be disheartening. I mean, it's a disheartening thing if you can see, you know, the bigger picture you see, just because you can see a bigger picture doesn't mean it's, you know, your gifts or your vices. I'll just say that.
Well, I mean, now for my part, Albert, on Thursday, February the 5th at 9:30 a.m., I'm going to be toddling off with a hopefully fresh hot cup of decaf. To something where, this one's not inspiring, because of the preposition involved. But I'm going because there's no way I'm going to not be at this.
Okay.
The case for clean coal and carbon capture and sequestration. I know.
Sorry.
Me too.
Well, I'll tell you what. Bob. You already made the commitment. You have to go. And you have to go to hear it. I mean, you know, you have to go to hear it, and I hope you find it. You know, I hope you find the opening with drop a couple seeds in, because that whole idea just needs to die. So put a couple of dandelions on that lawn.
Yep. Yeah, just
Yeah, take it out because it that's not a sustainable aspect.
On the other hand, however, there's I think I may be signed up for this one too. Labor 101 and why a vibrant labor movement is important for environmentalists. Because forgive my little sort of acquiescence to my own ego. That goes back to something I've been hollering for 5 years. Labor issues are environmental issues, and vice versa.
Yes, sir. Exactly. I mean, I hope to see when Barack Obama actually starts putting this money into, you know, to Rush Limbaugh's worst nightmare and breaking, you know, putting on these green jobs and, you know, sitting there doing like some sort of workforce for, you know, making America energy self-sustainable. Didn't he say he was going to do that within 3 years? All right, so the clock's ticking on that. You know, let me know. And Bob, if you happen to see anybody named Eric Lerner regarding any type of focus fusion plasma device, make sure you check that out too. I just had to throw that in there.
Okay, I absolutely will. And I'm running down here. Oh, there it is. The case for clean coal and carbon capture and sequestration. Here's the description. The workshop will examine the potential climate benefits of carbon capture and sequestration. This session will include an assessment of the state of technology development and discussion of the anticipated application of carbon capture and sequestration. Speakers Howard Herzog, Principal Research Engineer, MIT Laboratory for Energy and Environment, and Robert Hilton, Vice President, Power Technologies for Government Affairs, Alstom Power, Inc.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds fun.
Don't want to prejudge anything, but...
No, I know, but don't... Don't be shocked when it is exactly what you're imagining it's going to be. I mean, because it just sounds like an opportunity though, Bob. So take it as an opportunity.
Well, bingo.
An opportunity to drop some reality into that whole situation. Because my goodness gracious, clean coal. I've never heard such an asinine thing in my whole life.
I know. Makes you just kind of want to scream a little bit. I know.
A little bit.
Albert, brother, what a wonderful conversation. Thank you very kindly.
Thank you very much, Bob. I missed you. All right, you have a good, safe trip down there, and I'll be listening.
Yeah, we'll be trying to make it work. I think I've got a long tech session with John, tentatively scheduled for tomorrow night after I arrive at the hotel.
Hey,
everything
while you're down there.
Everything will work.
Anybody, if you happen to see anybody that deserves a yelling at, I'm counting on you, buddy.
Look, I've already established myself. I yelled at a senator last time.
Well, keep it on, buddy. Keep it lit.
All right, take care, Albert.
Later.
Bye now. From the wilds of frozen Wisconsin, our buddy Albert, and rolling along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Got to tell you, the rushing of this stimulus package, I'm seeing nothing good from it. Nothing good. All I'm seeing is a lot. You know what, Bob? This is what really gets me. And this is, I had a talk with a fellow conservative. People were all riled up about the bank bailout. Why are you rushing it? Why are you rushing it? But it's like a Pavlov's dog response as soon as it's something for the Democrats. I'm telling you right now, anytime someone rushes something for any kind of package and tells you it's an emergency in this country is a sham and a scam. And we've been scammed so many times. This happens over and over and over again. It's happening on the level of, I don't know, what we're doing with the global terrorism. Oh, my God. We're polluting the earth so much. Okay, what do we do? Silence. We got to do this. When I see things happening with this stimulus package, I just think to myself, this is so sad. And the fact that some Democrats who aren't willing to go on a stimulus because they have doubts and reservations, we should be ashamed of ourselves.
Some of them, yes, David. Some of them, no.
Okay, but listen, the truth is, this is just like the bank bailout, people. We're getting shammed left and right, and we're telling, and here's the other thing. People are constantly telling me, you're in a depression. I'll see that same person walking to Domino's with six pizzas out. We're not in a depression, people. What we're in is the refusal that we spend way too much money on everything. Every single one of us is in this society. We are a part of that. We are all to blame because of that. And I got to tell you, that's the reason why a lot of conservatives are so pissed off, because the ones that are sitting back looking at it, they're seeing these pseudo-liberals, these pretend hypocrites, saying what you need to do, preaching on that soapbox, and look what's happening. Exactly the same thing. And you know, Bob, it just ticks me off, because I don't have an answer for it.
I understand a lot of what you're saying, David.
Yeah.
Let's sort of back up a minute and look at it a little bit at a time, though, because if you just sit there and if you look at the big macro thing, it's just terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
The bank bailout obviously was a scam. I don't think there's anybody out there that thinks otherwise. Now that we know that, for instance, you know, Bank of America has $10 million to spend on tent rentals and gym cracks before the Super Bowl, or the bonuses, or any of the other various and sundry the just snide offenses against decency and any sort of common good manners that have been displayed. Okay, so I'm there with you. Now, all things entered into hastily, I don't think can be disqualified by virtue of their haste. Okay? We have an absolute boatload of people out of work whose unemployment is ticking on them. Okay? I think the sooner and the larger you pass an extension of unemployment, the better off you'll be. Because that really is immediate, because people's bills and people's lives really are immediate. I think if you expand the eligibility for food stamps and increase the funding therefore, I think you will see immediate benefits, because people, being people, eat. And $3 a day is a little bit ridiculous to expect of one human being and be able to call it nutrition in the same breath. So if there was immediate action on those two fronts, I would not dare criticize it, because I would know what its economic impact would be, and I would know what its necessity already was. You with me so far?
I'm with you.
Okay. Let's expand it a little bit, because I had this in the list, and this is the perfect time to engage this, because the Senate now has its mitts on the so-called stimulus package. Now, please remember, we've got to have some sort of benchmark against which to compare this stimulus package. George Bush's stimulus package was to loan ordinary Americans a little bit of chump change and expect them to go to Walmart with it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This current package isn't that. I mean, it's got a lot of stuff in it, good or bad, but it's going to be a bill that has something in it that everybody doesn't like. For instance, the package that started out in the House had a bunch of really, really slippery, shady, dubious tax cuts that there was no economist worth his salt who said would do anything except serve as a sugar tit to the very wealthy again. You know, and they haven't even drained the one they got with the bank with the banking bailout.
Mm-hmm.
That got excised. Well, like I said, the Senate has its mitts on it now, and guess what? The Senate has 15.5 billion dollars more than the House for companies that have lost money to get refunds of taxes they paid on profits in previous years. That's the Senate majority's doing. That's not the Republicans. Among other things, there are billions of dollars of other business tax credits in it that no economist worth his salt says will do any good. The reason Obama used that phrase that got such immediate caught fire, that shovel-ready programs. In other words, all we got to do is write the check and the work starts. Well, that will do, you know, if you've got some of those, that'll do real good. Oddly enough, one of those shovel-ready programs was the rejuvenation of the National Mall. That would have put some people to work, a lot of people to work, doing work, needed necessary repairs to the National Mall. But the Republicans didn't like that, so the Democrats surrendered their way to peace and freedom and took it out of the House version. And then the Republicans, not one of them, voted for the bill that with the stuff excised that they had demanded be done. There's a lot more stuff like that. Ben Nelson of Nebraska, who calls himself, and I do say calls himself, David, a Democrat. Ben Nelson of Nebraska is absolutely disgusted by the fact that there is an increase in the Senate version of the stimulus for Pell Grants. Okay? And are you familiar with Pell Grants?
Yes.
Okay. So you know that that's money that is given to deserving students in order to further their college education. Well, there's a $15 billion increase in funding for Pell Grants in the bill. And Ben Nelson, who calls himself a Democrat, just hates it. His words, in fact, quote, "You don't want to be against Pell Grants, but the question is, how many people go to work on Pell Grants?" And that just drives me crazy, David, because it's not that people go to work on Pell Grants, it's that people go to school on Pell Grants. And we've got a banking crisis, whether it's real or been ginned up, but the effect, you know, it's sort of a distinction without a difference, because its effect has been that it has made college student loans incredibly more difficult to obtain. So Ben Nelson is going to sit here and say, I mean, what he's saying in effect is he doesn't want students, he wants slave laborers. And that makes me crazy, because some elements of this have to be far-sighted and some have to be in the near term. So, I mean, I understand your concern that it's being rushed into, but it's not, you know, again, it's not, the vote on it isn't taking place tomorrow, and there is a boatload of discussion taking place about it, and even the Republicans have proposed their own little alternative $713 billion plan. And guess what? Because one of these is going to pass. It's not A, B, or C, neither of the above. It's A or B. One of these is going to pass. Guess what the Republican plan is? Two words, real easy. Tax cuts.
I'm not for any plan that is rushed. I'm telling you that right now, as it is, I've seen this trick done before. I see it constantly done before. This is the kind of thing that was on my front door when I got pamphlets. The Earth is dying. What are you going to do about it? And it's from some sham organization that wants me to donate money that goes into somebody's yacht club. This is what I'm talking about. It's this kind of constant, perpetual giving to continuing to just build up in debt and saying we're going to pay it back. We're going to pay it back. We're going to pay it back. Every time we bring up something like this, or I notice when people would call into the radio stations on talk radio, someone would bring it up, say, "Oh, you're heartless. You're not for poor people. You're not for this and you're not for that." It's like a trick. What I'm saying is what you're doing right now is ensuring more and more debt with all of this money passed. You can spend it any way.
I'm not going to spend anything.
You're not spending it. I'm saying the politicians and the people, they can spin it any way they want to us. But it's the same trick over and over again. And they say, "We're going to pay it back this time. Don't worry. We're going to do it. We're going to do it. We're going to do it with all these programs." And it never happens. And the reason why it never happens is because we spend cancerous, and we think we're entitled to all of this. And we need to stop. We need to stop and realize that we're not. This country is not good with money.
No, we're not good with money, and that's what makes us. That's curiously, that's what makes us the best safest investment bet in the world as far as government debt is concerned. We aren't good with money. We always want more. The question, one second, Dave, let me make something clear.
Yeah.
I agree with you wholeheartedly on the idea that this is debt-based. But, I preface this by saying that I am no economist, so I'm relying on the economists I have read. You cannot belt tighten your way out of an economic hole like this, because it only makes things worse. While we talk in terms of what you and I can't operate in the red, you and I can't go writing hot checks and not get called in, the same does not apply on the macro governmental level. It's sort of acknowledged, if you take people like Paul Krugman, that in situations such as this and in situations such as the Great Depression, government debt is what gets you out of the hole. And so while I decry the stupid, ignoramus debt that got us here, in other words, George Bush's foreign adventures in places like Iraq and Afghanistan, and the sort of Ponzi scheme that he ran to make it appear that the economy was in good shape, there's no getting around the fact that those chickens have come home to roost perhaps earlier than even the Republicans anticipated, and now something has to be done. And the one thing that most credible economists that I read say is that the one thing you don't want to do is get all flipped out and start trying to avoid or eschew debt. So, I mean, that is merely my understanding of it, and I certainly claim no expertise.
I'm just saying what I'm noticing right now when anyone brings up the situation of why we can't think this through with the stimulus. I'm getting flashbacks of this bailout. I'm getting flashbacks of everything that we have to pass. And just because a D is stamped on it doesn't mean we have to rush into everything that they say just because they're telling us it's an emergency.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I'm in total agreement with you. In fact, I think the Democrats are, and they're sort of showing it, even though they're not doing it in a way that's entirely pleasing to me,
mm-hmm.
They're showing that they are willing to think about these things. I didn't like the surrendering our way to peace and freedom portions of the right-wing satisfaction in the House of Representatives, but there is a debate taking place on it. In no Republican world, if you remember everything from 1994 to 2006, debate was simply not allowed. I mean, it was quite Soviet, really.
I understand that, but here's the other thing that I had talks with my friend when I had talked with my friend. I said when we were talking about the bailouts, and now the culprits are the banks, and we're going to haul them in front of Congress. My question to you is, who hauls Congress in front of Congress? Because we obviously don't.
Well, that's the trick. And that
really, mind trick. This is why I have a problem with all of this.
Well, every 2 years, the House of Representatives is supposed to be hauled in front of the people,
mm-hmm.
And every 2, 4, 6 years, there's supposed every member of the United States Senate is supposed to stand for election, and that is supposed to be that's supposed to be the ultimate check. Now, if you want to get either, I don't know if you'd call this macro or micro about it. Ultimately, what has to happen is the elections have to become much more terrifying for every single incumbent, Democrat or Republican. I personally think that a key component of that is passing the public funding of campaigns.
I'd like to get your another thing we talked about is I'd like to get your opinion on the because I live in an area and it's an example of this, and this is something that a lot of people don't want to talk about it. And it has to do with the public schools and the symptoms that you have to bulldoze schools to build up new ones. It's the same thing with the city hall. I can look out.
Oh, that's insanity, David. That's insanity.
I can look out my window and I see a giant City Hall palace right next to the historic Fort Western, right there. And my problem with all of this is the fact that my city, I'm not going to say where I live, but my city, it's fallen apart. No one's going to rebuild it. And the public schools are becoming like Saddam Hussein's palaces.
You know what?
The government buildings. And I won't just put it on the schools. I'll put it on the government buildings. So my question is everything that constantly happens around here of not being able to rebuild my city, why is it always going to the school systems? And why do they always have to have these passels and castles? Why can't they just have, like, the normal school that they had?
Well, let's go through that as cogently as I possibly can, because you got to remember I suffer from on-air ADD.
Yeah.
I'll try to keep focused.
Okay.
There is no greater example of institutional stupidity than the craze of the last 15 to 20 years for so-called consolidated schools. And we have seen it in West Virginia. It's been like a cancer on us, David.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you take the craze right now is for state government here to declare a county school board to be failing and send it into receivership, take it over, and ramrod school consolidation down communities' throats. Now, there are people here like Lorella Scarborough, at Coal River Mountain Watch, who also has a great deal of expertise in talking about this issue that I don't have. But what you'll get, for instance, is a monumental school that's supposed to serve every high schooler, for instance, in the entire county. And this is West Virginia. I mean, it's not flat here. You can't just go somewhere. You got to go over something, around something, or behind something to get from point A to point B. You just do. So in the case of, for instance, McDowell County, is it McDowell or Mingo? I can't remember. You've got these little communities that have had little community schools that have ferocious, fierce rivalries. I mean, you know, that go to fisticuffs, okay? And the geniuses have said, well, what we want to do is have us a mountaintop removal job, and when they're done removing the mountain, we're going to put the consolidated high school right on top of it. And the entire county goes, are you freaking nuts? But the other side of that coin is that I understand this too. People say, hey, going to be a lot of good jobs building that school. But the question I ask is, can there not also be good jobs renovating old schools? Because again, this is a sustainability, this goes to the heart of a sustainability issue. Because if you know, our grandparents, great-grandparents, you may have heard the phrase, God knows I've heard it a million times, made do with what they had. In other words, do not incur meaningless debt for the sake of debt, which is kind of running contrary to what I was talking about a minute ago.
Yeah.
But the other part of it is you don't do stuff unless you make do with what you have, and part of that is that you don't do stuff to be doing stuff. So that, look at the public works project, this federal prison that was built on a mountaintop removal site in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't, to this day, it doesn't hold a prisoner. And it's been there for eons now. Because the ground keeps settling and they can't make the gates work. Or the doors. Because it settles unevenly, and the local population, having the good gallows humor of mountaineers and hillbillies, refer to it as sink. And it's just money thrown down a rat hole. The sad thing is that the other side of this debate, David, is that when it gets talked about, usually it's working people who get blamed. Well, we could build more schools if we just paid the people building them less money. And that makes me crazy, too. You know, because we have laws that are designed to make sure that if public money is being spent to build public works, that we don't pay the people on the cheap who build it. And that's right and valid. But whenever those jobs come along, the people who build things want the jobs. So I understand that motivation, the 100%. But you're absolutely, well, here's a great example. When I was in Washington, D.C. A couple of weeks ago with Guy James, the Progressive Media Summit that we attended was held in the Russell Senate Office Building. And that thing is beautiful. I mean, granite blocks, marble floors, big 10-foot tall solid office, solid wood office doors that are, you know, 4 inches thick.
Yeah.
Just magnificent construction. Beautiful. Great big windows and, you know, attention to detail and what faces which way and where the light comes in. And
yeah.
Breathtakingly gorgeous. The other two Senate office buildings, Guy was telling me, are really kind of plain. Just sort of boxes with glass doors where the offices are, and nothing special, mm-hmm. nothing inspiring. And that's, you know, but the Russell Senate office building is still in use, and, you know, so is the United States Capitol, and I don't see anybody talking about tearing it down, building a new one.
Mm.
Because you do it right the first time. But you have a point that is valid where this stuff is concerned. However, to drop it at the feet of, say, the school system, I'm always wary of something like that because there is a whole right-wing mindset that hates the idea altogether of even spending so much as a thin dime of taxpayer money on something like public education because they hate public education. The very nature of No Child's Behind left is rooted in the fact that right-wingers despise public education and that whole scheme is designed to help prove that public school systems are failing and therefore prop up the for-profit, usually religion industry-backed private schools.
Oh, I understand completely, and I would just say in closing that my school, my dad is currently fighting to keep his high school from and my high school from being bulldozed over for a mall. I mean for a shopping, for a grocery store to be built right there, which is funny because I have one right around the corner. And to me, again, I'll preference this with something that will make your head spin even more. The people, I live in a mostly liberal city. It's like 90, 99, 98, 97, 95, 95. And this is what they do. You go into a city council meeting, they'll tell you what they need to spend money on. They'll tell you, we got to have this new building. And then they'll ask, well, what about the downtown center? They go, you know what? The downtown center, we don't really need to build that place. That place is fine. We don't really need to reconstruct anything. No, what we need is we need a new school right up there. And we need to get rid of, and then when you say, well, why do you need to get rid of the high school? And why can't you use it for something else, this building? Well, you know, there might be some, then they start talking out of their ass with fire hazards and stuff. And my dad stands up and says things like, I don't understand. You have a building that looks sound to me that would need a few improvements, and you want to bulldoze it, and it's a historical landmark. What is wrong here? And to just preference that again, my dad's a conservative, so we're living in a twilight zone. A conservative is standing up in a liberal town. Beat that.
Can't.
And I'll tell you why I think this happened. I think this happened is because people have been redefined so much in this city that they really don't know what it means to be a community. They don't understand.
Well, community, David, community was done away with long ago. Community, as you and I understand community, or at least as I think we're understanding it, discussing it.
Yeah.
Community's gone. You know, if you look, and I'm not trying to just wander around and be obtuse, but if you zoom in from something like Google Earth, and you look at these new subdivisions, they look like nothing so much. Who's the guy that did all the really freaky, scary alien artwork for stuff like Alien?
H.R. Geiger.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
And that's exactly the name. If you start zooming in on new communities, they look like nothing so much as something out of the mind of H.R. Geiger.
Hmm.
They look alien. They look creepy. You know, just these vast barren spaces with curves where curves aren't in the land. Where it's just a function of designing these little plots with no yards where they stuff $250,000 house, $250,000 house, $250,000, like a cookie cutter. And it's icky.
My problem is it always seems. It's not a diss to the schools. It's not any of that. Public schooling system, I understand. But the fact where the money it doesn't go in our downtown section, every year, it just constantly is more decrepit than the last. And that's my problem. Whereas the schools, again, I'm calling like I see it. They're looking like Saddam Hussein's palace. The city hall, right where I'm looking right now. It's looking like a palace in Baghdad or Tehran or whatever. And, you know, to me, there's something seriously. And, then, you know, the funny thing is when you go into these city council meetings and you sit down and you discuss it, they just sit there and they say, and they don't really have an answer. Well, why don't you want to rebuild and restore areas of Augusta to where it was? And or any city like that, and they don't have an answer, and that's my problem. And
yeah, but the answer, right, yeah, but sooner or later the answer, Dave, is always economic development, even if that's the wrong accent. We need some economic development around here. And usually that means the mall on the outside of town that puts everybody out of work.
I'm telling you that the liberals are mostly making the calls in this city, and they've been making it for years and years and years.
But if you look at something, but David, and I highly recommend this. This is a read well worth your effort.
Mm-hmm.
If you will go and treat yourself to reading Greg LeRoy's book, The Great American Jobs Scam, you will see why this happens to governments that call themselves liberal. You'll also see why it happens to governments that call themselves conservative. It happens because it is a philosophy that is outside of politics. It is what Greg LeRoy has aptly titled the shameful race to the bottom. You know, let's say Indiana, Alabama, and Tennessee are all vying for a new car plant. Well, the car manufacturer already knows where they're going to site the plant. The idea that they're going to make some decision after a lengthy determinative process is a sham. All right, they're going to put the plant where they're going to put it, and they never had any intention of putting it anywhere else. What they're going to do, however, is they're going to the two places that aren't where they're going to put the plant, they're going to use to leverage both against each other and against the place where they plan to put it to drive down their taxes. And actually get corporate welfare subsidies for putting the plant in. There is no better example of this, for instance, David, than the Volkswagen plant going in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Or the Toyota plant that was hustled from Mississippi that recently went belly up and was put on permanent suspension, until such time as, the auto industry gets well. And it's a con. And like I said, what they do is they walk in and they say, well, we got some jobs for you.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you're going to have to give us eminent domain to put it where we want it. And we want to put it in your city park there that's dedicated to the veterans of all wars. And we want to build a Bass Pro Shop there. You think I'm kidding. It happened in my hometown. All right?
No, I can see that happen.
They wanted to plant a Bass Pro Shop on top of the Veterans of All Wars Memorial Park. Not kidding. And the city councils are, well, heck yeah, gonna bring jobs, gonna bring revenue. Get me a shovel. I'll break ground tomorrow. And it took and I don't even know if they managed to build it or not, but it took a huge public outcry to stop it because it was so stupid. Here in West Virginia, we've got a Cabela's. Are you familiar with Cabela's? Cabela's is terrible, and Bass Pro Shop. They're both just awful about this. They're almost as awful or maybe more than Walmart. They leveled a mountain near Wheeling to put in a Cabela's. And the West Virginia Office of Economic Development fell on its own feet trying to get the damn stupid thing built. And here's the fun part. Cabela's doesn't pay any taxes. They don't pay property taxes on this. In fact, they get a check written to them by me via the state of West Virginia for having their store there. But wait, it really is a Ginsu commercial, David. There's more. They are not listed as a retail operation. Not kidding. You want to know how they're listed for tax purposes in this state? They've got some stuffed animals and some trout swimming in an aquarium. They're a museum.
Can you register head-on, like in this kind of fashion, like a religion or something?
Well, but then I couldn't talk about politicians. 501c3. They'd be on me like a duck on a June bug. I am looking at some other. We are looking at some other alternatives along those lines. But yes.
Before I go, I want to close out with a funny, amusing story.
Okay.
It's one of those I can't believe it's happened, but it's true, kind of things. Apparently, this happened in Russia. I don't know if you heard this. Stop me if you've heard it. Apparently, a drunk Russian was decided to have some fun, and he was a little bit perverted. So he got into his mind that he was going to rape a raccoon.
I hope it gets funnier.
It does get funnier. So he gets the raccoon, and he grabs a hold of him, and the raccoon decides, buddy, you just messed with the wrong person. And he sees that he cannot reach his face, and he can't reach his hands. So he bites.
Oh, no.
He bites into his manhood and runs away with it. Now, here's the funny part. The guy goes, and I'm not making this up. His name is Alexander Vermilov. He goes to the hospital, and he tells the doctors when he awakes from consciousness why he did this, and he said, I was just trying to have a little fun with the raccoon. They then have to break the news to him that we did the best we can with your manhood, but the piece that the raccoon ran away with, it's gone forever.
Oh, talk about earning it.
Yeah.
That's a deal.
That's one of those you go, is it true or is it not? I mean, I'd really like to see some YouTube footage.
Well, you know, the really scary thing is that the single most prone to carry rabies species on planet Earth, I think, is a raccoon.
Wow.
So not only does he... I think he's only at the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, pun intended.
It still makes me wonder. I only want to have some. And then he said that when he wasn't drunk. You have to wonder what's going through.
I was only hoping to have a little
like,
fun.
Actually, I just want to have some fun.
I was only looking to have fun.
Yeah.
And you do that and you do that before the fifth of vodka goes in, mother.
I don't know. That's just one of those things.
No, that's like the old. Well, I know a million of them. I won't do it.
Right.
But thanks, David. I appreciate
it. No problem,
Bob. Great conversation.
I hope you have a great trip to D.C., and I look forward to talking to you then. I do have a story, however, that we do need to talk about it, and it has nothing to do with this, and no, none of this real heavy debate into it, but it really has something to do that no one's talking about, and I think you'll find it interesting.
Okay, cool. Look forward to it.
All right, later.
Take care, David. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. I was only trying to have a little fun. Yeah, isn't that a line from a John Cougar Mellencamp song? Trying to have a little bit of fun. Yeah, hurts. So, yeah, that's from Hurts So Good. God, my brain. What? Help me. Let's see. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I accidentally hung up a while ago. I had to call back.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I thought I was putting it on on mute. Anyway, that might happen to other people, too, I'm sure. I'm sort of like the first two callers about this bailout thing or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Well, I think native suspicion is called for in this case. And frankly, I want real live, genuine, bona fide, smart people to think about this a little bit before they turn it over to the professional politicians.
Well, it's like that. I guess the Democrats came up with one thing, and then they're letting the Republicans put their two cents in. And it just seems to me like we the people are just going to get the crumbs, maybe if that. I don't know.
To be fair, I mentioned it talking to David and maybe talking to Albert as well. I haven't seen any massive spending plans for food stamps or low-income energy assistance or, I think there is some talk about unemployment.
Yeah, but couldn't they go ahead and do that? Why do they have to have it all in a package? Do they really have to?
Well, I think it has to all be in a package so the really noxious stuff can get hidden. Okay. Let me stop being obnoxious for a minute. Juanita, the reason it goes in a package is so that it becomes more difficult for more elected representatives to vote against. Does that make any sense?
Because if
it's in a package and there's a bunch of stuff you like and there's something that really makes you hold your nose, if you like the other stuff well enough, you'll hold your nose your nose for the stuff you hate.
But I just think it's wrong. It's just like I think I sent you an email. I don't know if you got it, but I really got down about it the other night. I really was so down about it.
I saw that.
I just felt like we've been sold out again in a different way, and. I'm just kind of come to terms with it, I guess. But, I'm so tired of this giving in to the Republicans. And they're coming out more and more. John McCain said that all of a sudden he's just acting up. It looked like he was going to be kind of nice for a while, if you know what I mean.
That was not going to happen, Juanita. Talking about John McCain here.
But now he's saying, Obama's going about it in the wrong way, trying to appease the Republicans. And I guess he's going to tell him how, or else he's going to keep it a secret about how to...
You mean like his secret about how to end the war that he decided to keep it to himself since he didn't get elected president? Right, yeah.
Yeah. And then today I heard, I hear bits and pieces. Maybe I should listen all of it, but I just can't stand half the time. But today there were a group of them together, and this guy was saying, the stimulus package that the Democrats are offering, the only thing it's good for is to spend money, and that's all the Democrats are good for. And I don't
see that stuff just makes me run around the house screaming, Juanita.
Yeah, I mean,
last I checked, hasn't it? I mean, let's be fair. Hold on a minute. All the Democrats are good for is spending money. Well, you got to say that's not true about the Republicans. They took $9 billion, sent it to Iraq, and didn't spend it, lost it.
Well, that's them. This is us now.
Right.
But,
I know.
Yeah. And they have to make their little remarks about the Roosevelt era.
FDR was a socialist failure.
Oh, well, that's what's wrong now is we're continuing his programs. And I even heard somebody say that the problem with him was that with Roosevelt was that he continued Hoover's policies, only he spent more. What?
Yeah, see, when that one comes around, that's when you just have to turn the TV off and walk away.
Oh, yeah. Believe me, I turn it off a lot now. But you know,
because, see, what Hoover's policies were, Hoover, when the Depression hit, thought, well, you know, we don't, we're getting all depressed and the market's collapsing. We don't have any money, so we got to cut spending. And we got to tighten our belts. Yeah. And he did. And guess what? The Depression got meaner and harder uglier. And that's where, you know, that's where the soup lines came from. That's where those signs that said able-bodied men keep moving, there's no work for you here came from.
Yeah. If he'd have continued, I probably wouldn't have even been born because my folks would have starved to death. And that's no joke. A lot of people people fought on the farms they could raise food at least. Not if they didn't, I heard you say the other night, now God bless you, I said, not if they didn't have money to buy the seed.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Or hadn't saved the seed.
Or couldn't keep their land.
Yeah, because we kind of forget about those tax issues, don't we?
Yeah.
And they don't.
That's what happened to my daddy's side. Now, my mother's side, they had their land, but they didn't. That's all they had. They didn't have anything else.
Couldn't do anything with it.
But
you know, you said something, and you're really good at this, Juanita. You utter these little profundities and then move on as if you've said nothing. You said something a moment ago that should be that I have to stop you and we have to sort of chew on for a minute or at least reflect on it, and that is, had Hoover's policies continued, you probably would not have been born. The same thing can be said for me. And the same thing can be said for thousands and, in fact, millions of Americans. Had Herbert Hoover and the Republican Party's policies been allowed to persist in their their noxious, knuckle, bone-grinding effect, there's a bunch of us wouldn't be here. Because poor folks pay the price.
Right. One time my daddy was talking to one of our neighbors, and they were from Georgia, too, but they were Republican. And he said, it would have worked out, you know, but Franklin Roosevelt put us in all this debt. And Daddy said, well, I don't think I'd have been living if he hadn't have done something, you know, because Hoover wasn't doing anything. He really didn't know what to do, I don't think.
Well, remember, Hoover takes office in 1928. Well, not really. He takes office in 29. I think that was his first term. Someone can correct me otherwise. Yeah, I think it was, though.
It was a one-term, I think.
Yeah, he was a one-termer because it was Harding was elected in 20 and took office in 21. He had the good grace to drop dead in office and turned it over to Calvin Coolidge, who lasted until the 24 elections. Coolidge then was followed by Harding, or Hoover, who took over in March of 29, and then everything started. And you know, he goes all the way to March of 1933. That's when FDR comes into office. And in the short span of those 4 years is when things like Hoovervilles began appearing on the landscape.
Oh yeah,
and the term hobo jungle enters the common tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is, if something is not done, well, we actually Bushvilles had already come back before the elections. Remember seeing the pictures from California?
Yeah.
So you know, there's a lot of similarities, and there is enough data to suggest how we go about getting out of this.
Oh yeah.
And as much as I hate running debt and running deficits, as unsound as that seems, just based on Agnes and me running a household here, you running yours, anyone else running theirs, you cannot run a viable household in the red. And frankly, that lesson has been brought home by all these people trying to live on credit cards for all these years.
They're
learning that lesson the hard way. You cannot do it. On the other hand, apparently the real live bona fide geniuses who deal with macroeconomic policy suggest, you know, for instance, Paul Krugman, that you can get out of this hole via debt. The question is, what kind of debt? And he has been absolutely unequivocal, Juanita, in pointing out that tax cuts, for instance, serve no functional palliative or curative purpose in getting out of a recession. They just don't. Don't work. So as much as I hate that debt notion, I guess, you know, until I figure out a better way of expressing it, I'll go with the guy who won the Nobel Prize.
Well, you know, the thing is that now, like, sometime you just have to live for the moment. You have to pay out what you have and just hope for the best another day. Because sometime, you know, it's either that or don't eat.
Yeah, well, you know, the old saying that my grandmother passed down to me. The Republicans promised us three meals a day, and they delivered. Oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal.
yeah, you got it right. And, you know, I'm going to tell you something that's kind of, you were talking about hobos, this has made me remember something. I remember when I was little, we did not want any food in the house. You know, and I was supposed to have been born after the Depression, you know. It was still very depressed. And anyway, you know, every once in a while these hobos that come to your house, you know, want something to eat. And this poor guy comes to our house. And I said, we don't even have anything to eat ourselves. He looked at me like, you live in a house and you don't have anything to eat. But it was true. Oh, God.
Well, we used to have a guy who would come and knock on the door here and had a drinking problem. And he would say, you know, can you loan me $20? I'll get it back to you next week. Or he'd say, can you loan me $20? I'll work it off.
Mm-hmm.
And we already learned from hard experience that was, you know, that was just his lie that he used to salve his own conscience. And so I just made it a point. And I'm sure that there are others who would say to me, well, you know, Bob, you did the right thing. You did the wrong thing. You were enabling his problem. But I am who I am, and I am what I am, and I've been helped when I needed it, whatever the problem was. And so, you know, I'd look at him and say, man, I got $10 in my pocket. Will that do? And without fail, you know, because I'd turn my pockets inside out and show him, you know, $10 bill. And will that do? Yep, that'll do. And so, you know, I wouldn't pass judgment on the guy. Probably went out and bought, you know, 12-pack or 6-pack or whatever the hell it would buy. But, you know, but when he'd say, well, you know, I'll be back to work this off or I'll be back to pay you back.
Yeah.
Just look at him. Don't insult me and delude yourself. Just take it and go with what blessings you can have out of it.
Uh-huh.
So that, I mean, and I think some of that applies, some of that applies like to Republican economic policy. Yeah. When the Bushies and everything said, we're tax cuts for the rich will come back to y'all because it'll create jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just artifice. That's just the fraud. That's just the con. And I would far rather look at a Republican and say, you know, just shut up and take the money.
Right.
Don't lie to me and don't try to salve your own conscience. You're just taken.
Yeah. Well, that guy, if we had food, I would have given him some food, you know, but we really did not have the food.
Yeah.
You know, to give.
Oh, I know.
And it's not that we wouldn't, you know, maybe at when they got paid, you know, but, you know, that's just the way the things were. I just kind of came to my mind. I'd forgotten about it until you said something about the hobos. But I love that story that's about the man you met in Washington. And Bob, nah, you probably ain't going to like me saying this. I think you have an angel there.
Well, might have been.
You know, we entertain angels unaware
sometimes. might have been. I'm not in any position to declare yay or nay on it.
But he came when you really needed somebody.
Yo, I was lost. I mean, I wasn't lost. I knew where I was. I just didn't know where I was going.
Yeah. But I just love that story. But before I go, I wanted to tell you about The View.
Okay.
Lord have mercy. Today was something else.
Is this now? I'm not trying to stop you, Juanita, but I got to know. Is this the? Cause see what you've done to me. I actually pay attention now. Is this the ongoing hissy about Jessica Simpson, or is this?
No.
That
no,
is,
no.
Is
has back in form.
Okay, so she got over her Jessica Simpson hissy.
Oh, I don't know about that. I didn't.
Well, then let's not put any more of it out into the universe. What happened today?
I mean, I didn't know about her and Jessica Simpson.
Well, no, she was defending Jessica Simpson.
Oh, defending her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, today somewhere they got around to talking about Rush. And Barbara was there today, too. And she went to that party that you were talking about. She was invited.
Oh, the alfalfa dinner?
Yeah. And, you know, Lieberman is the president of it.
Why am I not surprised?
She said, I'm telling tales out of school. I'll probably never be invited again. But she told about a lot of stuff. And it sounded kind of like a roast. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they roast the celebrities, you
yeah.
know, it sounded a lot like that because he was making some cutesy remarks, you know.
Right.
And, but anyway, he was talking about how he wanted to be the vice president so bad. But, anyway, she got all bent out of shape when they said something about Rush. Elizabeth did. About Rush saying, you know, that he didn't want Obama to succeed. He want, you know, at the, you know, what he said.
Right.
And about.
Wants him to fail.
And about how he seems to be the leader of the Republicans now. She said, oh, no, he's just someone that people on, you know, the right wing that they like to hear. She said, he's got, I think she said, 20 million listeners. And anyway, then. Every time somebody says something, she always interrupts. I mean, she don't even have the respect for Barbara that, you know, you would think. It,
well, now correct me if I'm wrong, Juanita, but doesn't Barbara Walters have a little bit of, shall we say, street cred on this? Didn't Barbara choose the oxymoron as one of her 10 most fascinating people of 2008 and interview him and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, just checking. Okay.
But... Anyway, Whoopi was mad about him saying that the only reason Obama was elected was because his father was black. And she said that really made her mad. But then they were talking about that. And then Elizabeth said something about, it was about Obama, you know, saying something about them listening to Rush. So they should, you know, be listening to him. And she said, well, why don't he be fair and say, well, the Democrats shouldn't be listening to Keith Olbermann or Chris Matthews. And I thought, how did Chris Matthews get into that picture?
Wow, who nominated him a liberal?
Right.
Air must be getting, air, you know, I think she's breathing her hairspray fumes. She's got to be huffing the Aquanet. That's all there is to it, Juanita.
She's so adamant. And then the piece de resistance, I know I'm pronouncing it wrong. But
you did it just great.
Did I? Anyway, this guy came out, John something. He's got a website called Media Malpractice. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
He's written a book about how the media allowed Obama to be elected.
And
oh, he was a nasty. You talk about.
Oh, what's he doing on that? What are they? Is Elizabeth Booker the show booker? I mean, what gives?
I don't know, but he was so nasty. He was one of the nastiest people I've seen. And he told, like he'd tell Joyce while she's talking about it, she needed to read his book or read his website. And he even told Barbara pretty much the same thing. And he said that something about Sarah Palin not being treated right. And they said, well, what about how Hillary's been treated? Oh, yeah, she has been. But said nobody's been mistreated like Sarah Palin has.
Ouch.
And I thought, yeah, what about Cindy Sheehan? But anyhow, he said, they brought up, well, she was blaming that on the powers that be about the, you know, Katie. She's still stuck on Katie Couric.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they said, well, what about when she did that turkey thing? Well, he said, well, she wasn't running for office then. That was afterwards. You know, so I don't know.
Well, you know, Sarah Palin got shown up to be a, you know, I hate to use really broad brush words like this, but she got shown out to be a liar this weekend.
What happened now?
Godzilla from Wasilla was invited by the House Republicans to their annual winter retreat.
Oh, okay. Well, she was at that party that Barbara went to.
They wanted her to deliver a morale-building speech at the House Republican winter retreat.
Uh-huh.
She declined their invitation with the following words. This is a quote. Pressing state business, you know, like Alaska, pressing state business made it impossible for her to leave Alaska. Now, bear in mind that the House Republican winter retreat was on the same weekend as the Alfalfa Club dinner.
Uh-huh.
Godzilla from Wasilla went to the Alfalfa Club dinner while the House Republicans were retreating. An anonymous Republican at the retreat said, and I quote, she lied to us.
Uh-oh.
Now, that's not some mean old liberal like Bob or some mean liberal like Juanita saying that Sarah Palin's a liar.
Right.
That's an anonymous Republican at the retreat. She lied to us. And then when she got called on it, her spokesman, this creepy dude named Bill McAllister, said, and I quote, my understanding is that the governor has not scheduled any partisan events on her current trip to D.C. But wait a minute, Juanita. We kind of got a problem here on her current trip to D.C.
Yeah.
Well, back early, it's that pressing state business made it impossible for her to leave Alaska.
Uh-huh.
Is there a time warp, a wormhole? I mean, is she so powerful she can split herself in two like some sort of Star Trek animal, be in Alaska and at the Alfalfa Club dinner at the same time?
She did sit with Barbara Bush.
Somebody has to, Juanita.
Barbara has to. So that's probably how she got her. She probably conjured her up.
Well, if anybody could, Barbara, that is one hate. Yes, indeed.
Did you ever hear about when Mike Malloy was saying about who her real father was?
No.
Alistair Clark or what?
Alistair Crowley?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, bless him.
Well, her mother was actually.
Was it Alistair Cook or Alistair Crowley? I mean, Alistair Crowley was.
Crowley.
Alistair Cook was the guy who did Masterpiece Theater and all that stuff.
No. Crowley.
Because Alistair Crowley is like some. He's an icon of the occult movement and stuff like that.
Right. And her mother was actually over there, and they believe she had sex with him. And they believe that Barbara was his daughter. And if you look at a picture of him, they look just alike.
All right. See, I hate it when you send me web surfing in the middle of the program, Juanita, but this is not fair.
I got this from Mike Malloy. I didn't get to hear any more about it, but I thought.
Well, Mike might have been funning. Mike's prone to funning.
I don't know. He might have been, but I don't know.
So I'm looking for a picture, and if it looks like
I'm
Barbara.
I'm surprised you hadn't heard that.
If a picture of Aleister Crowley looks like Barbara Bush, I'm going to have a real. Oh, my God.
You found one, huh?
Wow. Yeah, that's disturbing. Oh, he does.
Yeah, but she really her mother, I think before she got married, was over there and was a disciple of him. That's for sure.
Oh, ick. That's just wicked. Well, Juanita, I'm going to take a little break and then head toward the end of the program. Wonderful talking to you. My mind. Okay, you got my mind reeling now. We went from Elizabeth. Then again, Elizabeth Hasselbeck, Aleister Crowley, same.
You tell those folks up there that we people need some help.
I'm gonna. I am sure enough gonna. Okay. Juanita, you take care, dear. We'll talk to you soon. Bye now.
Bye.
Wow. I'm filibobstering again. We are 2 hours and 35 minutes into the program, and we'll just take a brief break. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. You know the number. Ring it up. I'll be right back.
that song. Oh, that guitar solo. The inimitable Ozzy Osbourne. And guitar solo by Randy Rhoads, I do believe. No, not that one. The other one. The great guitar playing Randy Rhoads. I don't know how. But you know what I mean. Okay, so about 19 minutes before the show ends, if you've got any thoughts, feel free to share them out. And it's been mostly conversational this evening in large part because we're not going to get to talk tomorrow night. And I figured it would be better if we talked than if I talked. I'm like that. I'm funny that way. But I did take a little break, and I had to run into, run out of the studio and go and make sure that the iron was turned on. Got to finish packing, got to lay out wires and cords and this and that, and make sure we've got everything we need to go for the gig rig to go to D.C. And as soon as the show is over, I'm going to go in and slump over a hot iron and make and starch my dress shirts till they can stand up on their own. I'm a heavy starch kind of guy. Dapper Dan man, heavy starch guy, all of that. But let's go to the phones and sort of wind things down or toward the end of the program this evening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, this is Benedict.
Hey, Benedict, how are you, buddy?
Oh, I'm pretty good. I want to go back to last Friday.
Okay.
And Ben Burke called in.
Yes, Ben Birch?
Yeah. And you guys had a great conversation, and Ben said something. And it got me into thinking, and as you know, I write a bit. And I wrote an article, and I wanted to kind of dry run it through you and maybe your listeners.
Sure.
Thought of it. It'd take about maybe 2 minutes if I could read it.
Go right ahead.
What I've learned lately, a friend who has extensive contacts, that's Ben, of course, around the world related this to me. He was recently talking with some people from Russia and asked them a very pointed question. What happened? He was referring, of course, to the collapse of the Soviet Empire. How did it come about? In their experience of the event, and what preceded it, was communism so fundamentally bankrupt as an economic system that its demise was a foregone conclusion? Would any future attempts for any who might try to establish a communist state be similarly doomed? Now, I should point out that both myself and my friend are committed capitalists, though of a liberal brand, and neither of us have any desire to experiment with any system other than capitalism. It's what we know and are comfortable with, and any desires we might have to experiment with capitalism are strictly confined to ideas we feel can contribute to what I might call healthy capitalism. So the point of my friend's question, and my interest in it, was purely academic. We like to learn both what works and what does not, and hopefully the whys and why nots of each. And so their answer surprised him and, of course, me. No, they all generally agreed. Communism didn't fail. Only the Soviet Union did. The reason, so they believed, that the Soviet Union failed was that a relatively small group within the Soviet communism wrested control of that system from the masses and skewed its excess produce, yes, the Marxian concept of excess produce, to their own narrow and personal benefits. They, in effect, rigged the system so that whatever wealth it was capable of producing wound up concentrated around themselves. While this worked for a long time, eventually the dynamics and tensions of concentrated wealth among great poverty that resulted drove that system to its destruction. They were not saying, mind you, that communism without this concentration of wealth was a good thing, only that it failed in this instance because of that concentration. This idea has captured my thinking. Could it be that all economic systems occupy some neutral, roughly middle ground, each of them both offering benefits and incurring costs, some of them a bit more palatable and some a bit less, but each at least marginally workable, i.e. acceptable to the governed, unless they became co-opted by a small group that perverts the distributions of its generated wealth to their own benefit. Could it be that the success of each has less to do with which economic model a society chooses and more to do with that society's ability to prevent narrow concentrations of wealth among a generally impoverished majority? My interest in these questions, of course, is obvious. Available statistics here in the U.S. easily show that trends over the last several decades favor great wealth increasingly being skewed to fewer and fewer, and a middle class surviving only by its ability to cannibalize its own accumulated wealth, home equity and pension savings, to maintain only temporarily its standard of living. If what my friend's Russian contacts are suggesting is true, the United States and its brand of capitalism is similarly doomed to the fate of the Soviet Empire. No, I'm not giving up on capitalism. I was born, raised, and dying in it. It just makes me think.
Well, and Benedict, you've kind of got to you got to do the thinking before you can reach the conclusions. You know that far better than I do. And you know, going back to when I was a kid in the 70s and was getting handed the, you know, big bad commie menace lecture. I mean, I was
you and me both.
I was growing up in Alabama, for God's sake. You got that in Sunday school.
Okay, you were retarded by 10 years, and I was 10 years ahead of you, and I'm probably 10 years older than you, I think. Heads under the desk.
Yeah, but the thing is, I didn't get a respite from it on the weekend because they preached it in church, too.
I didn't have that. I was liberal Catholic.
But for me, what happened is that because of the nature of my mind, I started looking at exactly how things were working, even through a child's eyes, mind you. I'm not saying I was some sort of a prodigy, Benedict. I wasn't.
Oh, no. Children are much better prodigies than we are.
But I looked at, and I remember making the statement, somewhere along the way, that we were getting to be much better Soviets than the Soviets were. Because I saw things taking place. I saw the secrecy in government. Richard Nixon defined the first stirrings of my consciousness.
How old were you?
By the time the Watergate hearings were going on, I was, you know, 10, between 10 and, you know, and then 12 when we left Vietnam, or when Vietnam ended, you know, 75.
I was one of those people that the CIA was keeping track of with, you know, signs and marching in the streets.
Right.
I'm a little bit older than you.
Yeah. But what I'm getting at though is, you know, even I started observing that, and that's what I said early on, and oh boy, did I catch hell for it. You know, we're getting to be better Soviets than the Soviets are. And lo and behold, you know, in my adulthood, I lived through the 8 years of the George W. Bush administration, and what do I find, Benedict? But that it became that maybe it smacked of prophecy, because, you know, what in the world is the difference between Walmart and the Goom department store? You know what I'm talking about? You know, the centralized Soviet department store in Moscow.
Well, by the time they're done, nothing.
Yeah, because, you know, wasn't it an old adage in Soviet Russia that if Goom didn't have it, you didn't need it? Isn't that what Walmart is now?
Well, it becomes that as it eliminates competition, of course.
Cheap goods cheaply produced on more or less slave labor. Same thing, isn't it?
Tom Armin said. Tells a story of back in New Hampshire. If he wanted to buy a pillowcase or some sheets for his bed, there was only one store you could go to, and he had to go 25 miles to get to it, Walmart, because no one else could afford to carry it because they got it cheap. They drove everybody out of business on simple things like bedclothes.
Right, and the same thing. There used to be and you know what one of these things looks like. One of those classic old men's clothing store where they know you by name when you walk in the door. They've got your measurements in a notebook, you know, blah, 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 and they can make off the rack look like bespoke.
When I was a kid, I was extremely poor. And I got out of it, and JFK sent me to an Ivy League school, and I got a great job. And, well, I, you know, even after that stuff had started disappearing, I had the money, and I used to go to the better stores to get my suits and everything, and I could walk in, and, you know, they didn't need my measurements. You know, did you gain a few pounds was the only question they had for me and everything. But, yeah.
And, well, what I'm getting at is those little stores used to exist in places like Beckley, West Virginia. They don't now because of Walmart. Because, you know, you don't if Walmart doesn't have it, you don't need it. And consequently, you know, in anticipation of the last trip to D.C. when it was so brutally cold, I had a stupid notion that I would like to have an overcoat. Well, there was not an overcoat to be found in Beckley, West Virginia.
Were they carrying the spring line already? Or?
No, they just don't do that. Nobody wears those anymore. Now, by the time I get to Washington, D.C., Benedict, yeah, everybody was wearing them.
In Beckley?
Yeah, in Beckley.
I mean, it's cold up there. I used to live in New England. It's cold up there.
Sure it is, but what you do is you go to Walmart, and even if you're wearing a suit, you buy yourself a nylon polyester shelled parka with the, you know, polyfill down in it, and it keeps you warm, and, you know, you don't worry about, because, you know, you can't just wear an overcoat every day. If Walmart doesn't have it, you don't need it. And you know, it's not just clothing. It's what Tom was talking about with bed sheets. It's going and looking for a specific kind of, you know. I saw a great line, I forget who did it a week or so ago, talking about, you know, Home Depot has announced that it's laying off 7,000 employees. And
Huffington Post
the smart aleck remark was funny. I didn't know Home Depot had any employees. You know, because God forbid you go there looking for something, and can you help me find one of these? Oh no, I don't know where they are. If you can find somebody to tell you that they don't know where they are.
You know, after my grand career in computers and consulting and all this kind of stuff, and I've kind of dropped out and became crazy and lost everything and became poor and got into construction and dug a lot of ditches and everything. This goes back 10, 15 years ago when I got into this menial labor, which I find very satisfying, by the way. At least when I go home, I know I'm tired for a reason. But I go into Home Depot and I talk to these guys because I was always looking for tools, because where I am, if the more tools you have, the better jobs you get. So I'd go in looking for tools, and I'd talk to these guys, and they were always very knowledgeable people. They were people who obviously had been where I was working, and, you know, only later in their life, people 40, 50 years old, had chosen to leave the actual manual labor and go to work for Home Depot, and they were all very happy with going to Home Depot. And I wonder how those people are feeling now. I don't think they're probably feeling quite as good now.
Well, and remember, it's the head of Home Depot, Benedict, who famously said in that October conference call that I referenced Friday night,
exactly,
that anybody who's not out there fighting employee free choice ought to be shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Mr. Stalin, phone call, Mr. Stalin.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but like I say, 10 years ago, I used to make friends with Home Depot was like a social encounter for me. I'd make friends with people who knew the trades that I was working in from years ago and working in them, and, hey, I need something like this, and if they didn't know what it was, you know, a two-minute conversation. Oh, one of these, and here's what you need right here, and stuff like that. And I just don't think you're going to find that so much anymore.
Well, and for my purposes, if I walk in, you know, I had a sudden need Friday afternoon for a roll of duct tape. And I went a mile down the road to the little mom-and-pop hardware store that's been there for 100 years.
I love them.
And walked in. They were getting ready to lock the door. I said, guys, sorry, just need a roll of duct tape. Oh, no problem. Hang on. And, you know, got the duct tape and left. And everything, you know, was on. No, they will not open the door for you at 2 minutes past whatever if you're at Home Depot.
Oh, no.
No. So, you know, I try to do business there. They're parts of my community.
We still have a local, I think it's a Sewell's. I don't know if you have them up where you are.
Uh-uh. We got a mountain named Sewell, but that's about it.
Well, we have one in downtown Lake Worth, and it's, you know, this cramped little thing where there's just so much stuff. And it's all hardware that you need for whatever you're doing to your house and everything. And it's so much fun to walk in there and just browse.
Oh, yeah. Well, this hardware store I go to, Benedict, is a relatively tiny space. But it's got those 100-year-old hardwood floors.
The 3 million parts in like one quarter of an acre,
or less. And right, and they know where everything is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not that I'm too lazy to shop, but it's a lot easier on them and me both if I say where's the, and they go there, and I get it and go.
Yeah, and the point I'm trying to make is, 10 years back when I used to walk into Home Depot, it was bigger. But if you dealt with the individuals who worked there, you had the same experience, and not so much anymore.
No.
Not so much anymore. You might, if you're lucky, find the one or two guys who really know from the old days and everything.
Exactly.
Because they're too busy.
Right. Well, Benedict, I've got to pull it closed, but I really appreciate the call this evening, and I enjoyed the conversation.
Okay, you take care.
Take care, and we'll be back at it on Wednesday, I think.
Cool.
All right, later.
Bye
now.
Bye-bye.
Operating under the moniker Benedict at Large, our good friend Benedict, calling from Florida. A quick reminder, the website headonradionetwork.com is open for your registration. Use it for its multiple functions. It's there for you. That's all I can say. Thank you very much again for your kind contributions to keeping the horn on the air. It'll make a big difference in this month and last month's as well. I'm off on the road tomorrow morning, headed for Washington, D.C., the Green Jobs Conference. I hope you will join me there. We'll be live Wednesday at the latest. And, you know, I don't know. It's possible we might try to pull something off tomorrow evening. I don't know. Don't know. So check in, but, you know, don't hold your breath. But Wednesday and Thursday, for certain. Thank you to John Fox, who's done such a magnificent job with the website, and is also our chief engineer and will be helping me tech out all the gremlins and make everything behave in D.C. Thank you to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, who was on the phone with me yesterday helping me solve problems. What amazing people I'm associated with. Thank you to Ben Birch, the literally most overworked man in liberal talk, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to all of you listening, sharing, chatting, foruming, emailing. Remember the new email address, bobkincaid@gmail.com or bob@headonradionetwork.com. That one just went hot during the program. Thank you, John Fox. Thanks to, thanks to everybody on the staff of the Horn, because all of this has been so much work. ELO Sue, Lottie, News Ninja Gene, News Ninja Susan, who sent me along a note reminding me that Eric Holder has been confirmed as Attorney General of the United States. Texas Betsy, our blogger. Oh, who am I leaving out? Please don't have your feelings hurt. I'm just trying to kind of rushed. Thank you to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and CoalRiverWind.org. Big doings tomorrow with them. And we'll probably talk about it a little bit on Wednesday. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And yet somehow exciting week kicks off here at the Horn. It's a little past 6 o'clock, coming up on 6:02 here on the East Coast. I'm Bob, of course. Welcome to the new listeners who find the program every day, who find the network every day. I hope you'll feel at home here, and I hope you will treat this as the family-style community that we have built. Making for free-flowing, wide-ranging, open conversation. Make yourself at home. Make yourself welcome. There are, in fact, a variety of ways to make yourself at home and make yourself welcome at the Horn. One is taking part in the programming. I'm not the only one. There are a myriad of hosts on the Horn, including Guy James, John Fox, Mark Levine, myself, Billy Shears, Rick Goodner, and Rick Smith, with hopes for continued growth all the time. Those programs are all open to you, either live via the telephone, via email, or via the chat room at headonradionetwork.com. For that matter, there are the forums, the forum, at headonradionetwork.com. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com has been enjoying a massive renovation, kind of like we cleared out all the dusty old vinyl 70s furniture and started bringing in the new postmodern stuff. And the new website is nothing if not absolutely stunningly gorgeous. John Fox, assisted ably by chat room moderator.